regular meeting.
If I may take roll call, please. President Wilburn?
Here.
Vice President Hickman?
Present.
Director Starr? Are you online, Director Starr? Okay, we'll need to follow back up. Director Starr said that he's participating remotely via Zoom today. Director Moreland will be absent today. Director Edwards?
Here.
Council Cooper?
Here.
Information Systems Manager Martinez?
Present.
Environmental Health and Safety Manager Perrin?
Here.
Finance Manager Wong?
Here.
Power Division Manager Leon?
Here.
Myself, General Manager Mosley? Here. Water Treatment Superintendent Shipman?
Here.
And we have our construction foreman here with us today, Scott Dehoff?
Here.
And then public participation. We have in the room with us today Matt Barnes, Grisney. And who do we have online?
One second, I'm letting somebody else in. I have three anonymous. I have Charles Sharp, and I have Miss Burnett.
Okay.
And to remind participants to press dial star 9 to raise your hand if you're participating by phone.
Director Starr, have you joined? Okay.
So I do the pledge?
Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, let's move into approval minutes. Any questions on the minutes from last meeting? Accept the minutes as written.
I'll second that.
A first and a second. Any comments, Art? Nothing in public? No comments, sir.
Ayes?
Aye.
All in favor? Three ayes? Okay. All right. Steve? Check some numbers. You got any money left?
No. Thank you for asking. Nice to see you this afternoon. We're now on tab 2, our listing of checks and warrants. As we typically do, try and point out some of the major expenses, highlight those for you, and bring those to your attention as necessary. But then, as we're complete, feel free to ask any questions or ask for clarification. The first comment I have would be just on check 62044. It's the first one listed there. That is was paid to tree service, cutting down hazardous trees. And as Dan reminded me earlier today, that was actually a FEMA reimbursed project. So we're grateful for those expenses, or if we're going to have them, at least those were reimbursed. Dan or Jamie, maybe, I don't, is there any other comment I should make on those?
No, the location was the South Fork diversion area of the project where these trees were.
How many trees did you get for that, Dan?
I don't have an exact count, but I can get that and get that for our next meeting.
You mean like 10, 20?
It was in the 10 to 20 trees, yes.
Okay, that's good. I don't need any more of that. Thank you.
Is that right?
Yeah, about 7 to 10, and it was South Fork diversion, and then a little bit further to the south of the project, also in the vicinity of SF-17. Those two areas were predominantly where the most damage was sustained as a result of the North Complex fire last year. There's photos and different things we can make available, and this work had actually been completed in November of 2020. but as a result of getting in to get that done, to then get through winter season, get back in, delays is why you're just now seeing that invoice, was the crew needing to get back in, do some final work in that area.
All right, thank you.
You will see a number of charges, more minor than not, throughout the this list of checks. Let me just highlight the 2021-0981. That number will show up in the account column. That was those were expenses for our Sunset Hill generator building. Give you up to date on that. And then let's see, 980-2021-0980. That was the the SF-17 access bridge, Forbes Town Diversion Dam access area. Some work done on that. All part of our budgets, and work is either substantially complete or well underway for those. On page two, we have a significant payment to PG&E. It's right in the middle of the list there, check number 60295, the payment to PG&E again. That was our true-up for the solar project, solar plant out at the treatment plant. We've been warning you about that, that payment over the last few months, giving you a little bit of heads up that that was going to hit. It turns out our budget will be just about, we'll hit just right at our budget for that line item, but that, and then of course the dollars are starting to be expenses to PG&E are significantly reduced now that we have that project completed and taken care of. John, would you like to expand on that anymore?
Yeah, I mean, for 6 months we were down our one of our large inverters and the smallest one. We had two large and one small, so having almost two-thirds of it down, it definitely hurt us pretty bad. We've seen great returns after having United Sun Energy come in and install the five microinverters, and we've actually seen the a huge turnaround. So if they would have been online the entire time, the bill most likely would have been probably $125,000 less. So.
Yeah, $125 total, actually, if you extrapolate that out. So we would expect 2022 budget, assuming they continue to function as they are right now, our budget line would be somewhere between $100,000 and $125,000 for the year of true-up.
Yes.
And so what are they saving us?
I'm sorry?
How much money are they saving? How much money are we not paying?
What did we normally pay in the past?
$8,000 annually when they were fully functioning.
Right.
No, but if we didn't have that system, what would we be paying for power?
Oh,
what would this be?
$400,000.
$430,000. Significant. Actually, let me go back to the top of page two. Badger meter, that top line there, is a good sized chunk that we paid out for meters. Just note that there were 64 meters that we purchased, building up our inventory. And actually, this was, of course, purchased back in June. So those are many of those have actually already gone out and put into service already. But I wanted to highlight that for you. Moving on to page three. We have a payment to VistaMed. That is June 18th, check number 60329 to VistaMed. That was a $23,185 expense. That was for our project, the treatment plant storage area network, SAN network. That project is complete, if I understand it correctly, from ART. The budget was actually $26,000, so it came in a little bit less, but ART maybe.
Absolutely.
Expand on that?
Yes, we most of the machines up there, it's a local storage for all of the servers and historical data that is being kept at that location. Unfortunately, the older unit was no longer going to be supported, and so we need to replace it so that we could continue to have it running as needed.
And that was done.
That is
perfect. Yeah, great. And let me keep Art on the spot here. Go to the page 4 or 5, next page. That is, I'm looking at check number 60369. Inland Water Works Supply Company. Those were for Hertz, 65 to Hertz, and now we have Hertz, ERT.
So the Hertz are what connect to the meters that allow us to read them via radio read instead of actually having to physically lift the plates up and do a manual read. So that is required on all new installs and any replacement installs. It is an additional component, but it does save us time and expense.
So those are all related to our meters.
And they're still, what's the distance read on those?
It depends. It depends on the configuration of how far they are underground, the material that's on top, but you can get a couple hundred feet out of them usually if they're configured properly.
Oh, nice. So. Thank you.
And the last check that I see on my notes, a few checks below that, was payment to Manassian, check number 60371 for May professional services rendered. Again, just a significant chunk for us. And then
on that one, if I may, about 25% of those costs, though, are tied directly to the proposed water transfer this year.
Those are my comments in terms of checks.
We did have an unforecasted expense. It was on page 305, check number 60328. That was for a 200-amp breaker. That was specific to the Bangor treatment plant. So we had a breaker out there that would not stay engaged. We needed to replace it. So we will offset that. That $1,712, almost $1,700 is this breaker, and then $16 is what compensating there. But we had to do emergency purchase for that breaker. We will offset that in our adopted 2021 budget under O&M. But it was indeed an unforecasted $1,600 expense. And then just for clarity, I thought I'd take an opportunity on the same page 305. If you go down to check number 60335, which says all metals, pipe, and supply, there's really two primary pipe contractors locally that we will procure from. One is All Metals, and one is Metal Works. All Metals has sold, so you'll start seeing a shift to Valley Pipe versus All Metals. That's one and the same. I'm assuming we'll keep the same supplier number, vendor number,
correct,
those types,
yeah,
of things, but you're going to see a new name on there as that shifts across. Those are my comments.
And then a similar comment on page 2, check number 60309 was a payment to Capital One. That's a credit card, of course, that company, and we've all seen their commercials. But they've actually assumed the credit card function for a Walmart. So all those Capital One expenses that are listed there are payments that we've worked through, that we've done, made with Walmart. And when we picked up their products at that location.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions for Steve? Approval of expenditures for the month of June 2021 in the amount of $1,298,738.96, and authorize the transfer of $1.5 million from the TCB general fund to the TCB accounts payable and payroll fund for the payment of regular operating expenses.
Second.
Got a second? Any comments out there?
Nothing in the email as of 2/16.
No comments on that. Okay. All in favor?
Okay.
Aye. Three ayes. All right. Let's move on to tab 3, some information items. Steve.
Thank you again. Got a couple comments that I'll just run through real quickly here. Investment returns for CalPERS, our retirement system, have been calculated as of June 30th. I guess at this point they'd still be preliminary, but they were very good, as you can imagine. They reported a 21.3 or preliminary return of 21.3% on their investments. That is actually a very interesting. So at our funded levels of our liabilities for retirement will be much better. That number will come to us in the next, probably on or before September 30th or so I'll be able to report that back to you. This investment return, of course, won't show up until the next year, though. But there was a policy adopted by CalPERS, the CalPERS board, a number of years ago, which was interesting. It's a little bit counterintuitive. So even though the investment returns increase, our contributions from the agency side and from other public agencies as well as the state will actually increase a little bit because of the assumption that these increased returns will not stay at that level in future years. So it's all related to a concept of fiscal sustainability, making sure in the long term, which is of course 30, 40, 50 years out for CalPERS, those dollars are there. We're in much better shape, but like I said, it will increase our annual contributions in the near term for our agency. But I'll keep you posted on that as we go through. I've got attached a publicly available pay range schedule. We needed a little bit of a change with our hydro positions, engineer position in the power division. So that is being listed and will be available on our website following our meeting today. An update on our financial statements and the audits for 2020. We're working through finishing that up. Should be on the partner's desk for the final review by the end of this week. So that's how that is looking. And then I've included a calendar for next year's budget meeting Director Wilburn and Director Hickman to look at their calendars and see if our Tuesday, November 9th date works for a finance committee meeting. And then we will have, and that will allow us to prepare a budget for presentation at the November 23rd regularly scheduled board meeting. And that calendar is page 5 on my report. You'll see that this just works through our process for developing the budget. Next month, you will start seeing estimates. An estimated column will be started to be included in my monthly financial reports, give you a little more of an update in terms of how revenues and expenses are coming in. We'll recognize projects a little more closely as for those that we're going to do and give better estimates than what we had 6, 7, 8 months ago, and recognize if there's projects that we're not going to do. We'll free those dollars up and recognize that as well. For the financial report part, I'm on now page 6 of my notes. You'll see a standard bar graph there with our power generation through June, actual numbers. June, as it has been virtually all year, June revenues were less than average. At least they were slightly above what we received last year, but they have been less than average. Of course, that's not news to you, but that reports that. Next, page 7 is our cumulative lines. We are at almost about 4.5 million is where we are at 2021 for all four powerhouses. Our average is 7.8 million, so there's a gap that, again, it's not news to you, but that's where we're at as we stand right through June. for our actual financial status, starting on page 8. Joint Facilities Operating Fund. I've got revenues and expenses reported through June 30th. Of course, our fiscal year is a calendar year, so we're at 50% of our budget. You can see in the right-hand side percentage of budget total revenue on page 8, just about halfway down the line, or halfway down the page. Because of that, our hydro power generation were significantly low, less than what our budget would have anticipated. So you'll be hearing more about that. We're at 21% there. On the other hand, our operating expenses, page 10, total operating expenses, something to keep an eye on. And in terms of JFOF operations, we're at 46%. So we're matching up what the budget was. Of course, the revenue isn't there. That is a concern for us, but at least we're maintaining with our operating budget. And then for general funds, same thing, I'm now on the page 14. Our general fund revenue, right on the bottom there, right-hand side, we're 40% received versus budget. Perfect world, we'd be at 50%, so that recognizes where we are. Most of our dilemma is in the Slide Creek Power Generation, the Slide Creek Powerhouse, the generation there. Numbers actual received through June 30th, or actual earned through June 30th, $504,000 versus a budget of $1.6 million was how we budgeted that. And then again, just to keep track on things, our operating expenses, page 17, operating expenses in the general fund, which is water division in the Slide Creek Power Plant. We're at about 44% is where that number, how we're tracking there. So we're online on expenses. Unfortunately, revenue is not matching. On page 15, go back to that one, just so you can see how that's working out. Utilities, the bottom section there is the water treatment. That's our Miners Ranch treatment plant. Actually, it's Miners Ranch treatment plant and the Bangor treatment plant. All of those expenses are coming in, but if you look at that utilities line, that shows gives you a sense of the impact of that solar inverter problem that we had. Those are my comments for today. I'm happy to respond to any questions.
No questions for Steve. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Dan, you're up.
Good afternoon, directors, everyone.
How's it going?
Good, well. So, the next few minutes here, I'll be sharing with you highlights of our Power Division monthly report for June of 21. So, starting with operations here, obviously this dry slash critical hydro pattern that we're in. But just to mention some of the highlights of managing our storage, we do convey water from Lillygrass Valley Reservoir down to Sly. And so you'll see that the report that we mentioned here, 130 CFS, we decreased that to 50. Our storage, since I wrote the report here, has dropped by about 2,000 acre feet. We're at about 95,000 currently. And that decrease is due, as we'll talk about in a minute, due to the dispatching of the units, the hydro generators. This asset performance table here at the bottom of page 1, the total productivity that we saw in June was 9%, but it's been as low as 2 to 3% the past month, so we're seeing a little more run, which is good news. On the page 2, the chart up on top there, we've got if you see there under the third column, available for generation hours, we see that there were 720 hours in June, so we have very good, excellent availability for the four units. Didn't have any significant unplanned outages. We see a little more under the generation dispatch for full output. We're seeing some numbers there besides zero for a change. That's positive. The far right column, we see larger numbers there for the units running at partial output. So This is a scenario where we have obviously very low runs productivity-wise, but we had excellent prices. So the pricing for the month, the average averages are around $30 to $34 a megawatt hour, and we're up around $50 a megawatt hour, which is very good. Unfortunately, the volume wasn't there along with the good price. Moving on to the maintenance heading here, all four powerhouses are fully operational. We're in a season here, and part of the season where we just we want to run the powerhouses as much as we can, given the water supply. Other project assets that we continued, our maintenance crew diligently does inspections of canals and ditches, cleaning the various intake screens. As Steve mentioned, the crew have been fabricating various crossings and access for SF-17 and here Miners Ranch Canal as well. Our crew have been doing a fair amount of recoding of the buildings, the various outstations. So we've been going to various locations and South Fork, Little Grass, and as I mentioned here, Slate Creek Diversion as well, the generator buildings, which were getting a little paint was kind of not there, so these buildings were basically power washed inside and out carefully and then and recoded. And so it just makes for a better safety because we had the lighting works better when the walls are white versus some other color. And so it was needed to be done. We continue to work at the Sunset comm site to do work up there for the various upgrades that we're doing here this year and as we transition here into a new power agreement and also a new architecture that we have in place that we're installing. Under the rate compliance heading, an update here with regard to the statewide and local drought. So there is a Butte County Drought Task Force, which consists of county directors and other resource managers. And this group made a recommendation to the Board of County Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors, Butte County, to basically recommend the approval of this resolution, a local proclamation for drought emergency. And this resolution of local proclamation for drought emergency was approved. So the agency, of course, as we've seen in our past meetings here, the agency has adopted a water shortage contingency plan for the agency as a guide for us to use here in these dry conditions. At this time, just want to mention that our agency remains positioned to deliver the adequate water supplies for domestic irrigation, hydropower, and environmental needs, and they will continue to provide updates. And then the graphic here showing that 2021 water year is defined to be a critical year, and we can see the quite a bit of variance here in hydrology over the past years. Under projects, we continue to work on, as I mentioned a bit ago, the energy delivery transition project. So we have a communication network project that we are currently working on, so our crew are installing hardware at the various locations to facilitate this communication network, which will be used for ISO meters, for control systems. And another project that our maintenance crew are working on is mid-level valve access. This is at Lost Creek Dam, so we have metal stairs and walkways and platforms that our crew are fabricating and then installing to allow those mid-level valves to be accessed and operated. Under personnel, I just want to mention that Marty Kent in our Power Division group, after 20 years of service to the agency, retired. And he worked as an equipment mechanic operator. He was just always paid a lot of attention, great attention to safety, and he was a good diagnostician as far as troubleshooting, and this was overall just very enthusiastic in his work, and is a great guy to work with. And so we'll miss him and wish him well, of course, in his retirement. We are currently, the agency is recruiting for a hydro civil engineer, and this, based on the agency's need for fulfilling the FERC and DSOD and other compliance and safety obligations, we're recruiting for someone who has experience with the dam safety and regulatory compliance for dam safety in particular. And so we're currently recruiting for this position. It's a senior level position. Typically, it will be a licensed type of engineer, civil engineer.
with an emphasis on structural.
Yeah, thank you. So then on to the charts. So somehow I got two page forwards here. That's my mistake. So on to the first plot here, the second page four. Again, just a graphic showing the precipitation into our slide reservoir, slide vicinity, strawberry vicinity, rain gauge. And so we see here that the 21 water year, how low it is in comparison to past years. And so it's just another, this is an ongoing indicator that I repeat every month here. The next page, page five, we see the red plot, the lowest ones. Those are showing the storage for the Bluegrass Valley Reservoir and Sly Reservoir, which is from the graphic here you can see is significantly lower than past years. And then the final page, page six, in looking at the powerhouse operations bottom of the page, we are currently we've run 49,500 megawatt hours through production on the units. So 49,000 up to this point here at the end of June. The average for this time of year would be around 185,000. So we're at about 25% of that, 30%. And of course, Steve mentioned the financials as well. So those are the items I intended to cover. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
And is that year to date that we're at 25 to 30%, or is that?
So yes. Yeah, so in looking at for the production, So for the production, the year to date from January 1, where we are currently at 49,416 megawatt hours. And when I look at the January to March, January to June for the past 10 years, and sum all those, then do the average on those, that comes out to 185. Yeah, so it's quite a bit lower.
Hey Dan, I have a question about your units were ran at full output, at least a little bit more than prior months.
Yeah.
Is that a grid need? Cal ISO need that is dictating that, or is it something else?
It has, part of it is based on the upswing in demand as the price has increased. And PG&E is starting to schedule units a bit more to target a certain end of year storage as well. So we were kind of holding back here for about a month or two at the current storage around 100,000-ish acre feet. And the prices were soft, like in the 30s. And then when prices began to get into the 50s and 60s, you begin to rise a bit more.
What do you expect the state EWR is going to lose height here in another week or so? What do you expect, if anything, to change as a result of that?
I don't think anything will change immediately. We've had some discussions with the state with regard to its releases, just some questions about Kelly operations, because it obviously is a source of water to the downstream side of the dam. But those have just been preliminary, kind of tentative discussions.
But if what will happen is PG&E will be looking at that grid demand, likely an increase in pricing as well as a result of Hyatt, and then try to move as much water as they can through this project while maintaining our elevation compliance through September 30th. Right? So what they will do is if that demand is there, they'll run us, but not put us in out of compliance situation. So they're going to manage water storage till September 30th. We expect, we expect the entire year forecast model to be about 170,000 megawatt hours. When Dan talks about just under 50,000 right now, that requires a pretty good hockey stick to get to the back half of the year. Just put that perspective, over the last 10 years, 170,000 is below our lowest shelf. Our lowest was 193,000.
Yeah,
it's high of 478, just to give you an idea. But that's what's happening. It's really it's water and grid management until Hyatt goes offline. It's push as much through as you can without taking us out of compliance.
Did you run average also on those numbers? 10-year average?
Oh, on the annual production?
Yeah.
We've it's in the 400s. We've been as high as 574, been as low as recent 193. So I have run averages on those in the past. We can share those in the future as well.
33% roughly.
It's essentially we're at the we're in that 30s range right now. So we were basically holding, as Rance was mentioning too here, we were holding our storage here for the past few months. And we've been below this room curve in our current agreement. But as these, as the demand increases based on the things we've discussed here, we foresee going from the 95,000 acre feet we currently have down to around 60, while being mindful of the compliance points, but getting down to 60 by year's end. So we're gonna run 35,000 acre feet of water for the project, theoretically, is what the forecast is. So,
any other questions for Dan?
Thank you.
Ready to put
your up? All right, thank you. We'll start with domestic water treatment operations. So this is John Shipman and his team's work. So the Minor Trench Treatment Plant, the production through June was 268 million gallons. Bangalore was exceeded the 1 million mark. We haven't been there a while, so 1.17 million gallons. You can see the trend chart. Obviously, as it warms up, the demand goes up as well. So we had a high of 9.81 million gallons per day and a low of 7.44. John, what are we running at today roughly? It's probably dropped a little bit, right?
It's dropped a little bit, but we've been averaging over 10 million a day for a couple of weeks now. So
what's interesting about it is it takes a lot of new accounts to make a step function change in that draw, which is interesting because we've been just adding, I'll talk about it in a moment, accounts after accounts, but it's not swinging that number much. Everything's in compliance at both plants, and as John's reported here, the production's about 114% of average over the last 5 years. Mangalore's about 115% of average. If you look at the irrigation season so far, so all canals and ditches are in full operation. Got a breakout below of the primary four. So SF14 is being dispatched at about 15 cubic feet per second. We are drawing. At the time I captured this, WD6, which goes in the Lower Forkstown Ditch at 7.63, that's varied from low sevens all the way up to eight. At this time it was 7.6. We've been holding under that 8 cubic feet per second this year, showing that the maintenance efforts last year in the off-season have really paid dividends. And then we've already started targeting what our off-season maintenance will look like by mid to late October of this year to improve even more for the following season, for the 2022 season. And you can see that both Bangor and the Palermo Canals are running as planned for typical consumption. Page two, so district-wide operations, what's been happening within the district since we've last met. Crews have been really busy in two primary categories. You'll see in the middle of the page as I break out the general areas and then and what divisions each of you serve and what's happening in your neighborhood with your neighbors. You can see we had a heavy lift again on new service installs. There's six or seven there. And then also leak repairs tend to match that. So again, the issue that we have been chasing down, you'll hear more about it here later during the board meeting, is a lot of water hammering is happening within our system, and we've got science to back that up. And so for those of you that have heard us talk about water hammering, what does that mean? That's basically operating a fire hydrant without proper training on how to open and close, proper tools, etc. And so this picture gives you an idea of when you open a valve properly, water flows smoothly. When you open a valve rapidly, like a fire hydrant, you hammer the system, and that creates weak points in your infrastructure. And so we have been chasing a number of those leaks and are concerned we'll continue to do so if we don't make some serious adjustments within the district on how to manage that. Right below that below picture, this happens to be a 12-unit complex. So historically, this 12-unit complex had one master meter that served its irrigation and then the all 12 units. The owner of that property is selling those as individual dwellings. So we've needed to do a conversion. And so that's what's identified under installed services as Segura Drive. And so what you're seeing here in these photos is the first manifold system of putting in six individual meters. So there's two primary locations at this facility. So the crew, under Scott DeHoff's leadership, went in there, had to identify what the underground infrastructure looked like, find a proper tie-in location, build these pretty elaborate manifolds, and so we'll have ultimately a total of 13 meters, one 3/4-inch meter backflow to each dwelling, and then one meter that serves the irrigation within the complex under HOA program. So that's what you see there in those pictures. So it's really turning out nicely. We're about 50% of the way done. Half of the complex has been completed. We're waiting on some components to finish the other half. Highway 162, road widening. We are here. I've dreaded this for a year. I think I don't stand alone in that, right, Scott? But here we are. So it's our turn to perform work on the Caltrans Highway 162 road widening project. We will start this upcoming Monday at 7 p.m. Again, this is night work. We've got this broken down right now into about 7 days of work, assuming no problems. Originally, we were 13 days. We managed to reshape that to 7. We will be using subcontractors for traffic control, and then we'll be performing the balance of the work internally, other than the saw cut of the asphalt as well. So we'll keep you attuned. About 60% of our overall staff in Water Division will be working 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning, starting next Monday. I will balance, I will check in on these guys throughout the night, but also be available during the day if you as directors or any of our customers have any questions or any needs as well. So wish us luck. We think we've got a well laid out plan. All of our materials are here. We're staging, and now it's time to get it done. Get it behind us. We budgeted $137,000. Right now, assuming no significant issues, we'll probably come in right around $100,000. So about $37,000 less, maybe $90,000 in that range is what our actual should have been looking like. 2021 proposed water transfer. Thought I'd give you just kind of a timeline update there from how we filed on the 26th of May. Discussed the proposed transfer to Santa Clara Valley Water District at June's board meeting, and then June 16th, the State Water Resource Control Board issued an order approving the petitions. All of that information can be found on the agency website at southfeather.com, has all the newest publications. And then if we're in a position to perform the proposed water transfer, which we believe we will be able to at some level, again, that could be zero all the way up to a maximum of 8,000 acre feet, that transfer would start on October 18th of this year and be completed by October 30th of that same month. And so, again, like I said, it can be 0 to 8,000. We'll see as we continue to move along with our water conditions. And then finally, you know that it was years in the making that the community line, we performed a domestic main line extension of at least a portion of the community line. One of the receiving customers who had historically been on the community lines has been a customer of this district for years. Wrote a letter, so I've included the letter in this staff report for you to read. Kind comments to staff, the director's participation support of this type of investment program, but also ends that there's far more work to do within this district. So as funding opportunities arise, we clearly have a lot more work to do. I know all of you have been laser-focused on challenging staff to find ways to continue that momentum. That's my staff report today. Any questions or comments? All right.
Thank you.
Okay, our next tab, tab 4, is an information item. And this is a continuation of our hydro energy strategy. We've talked about this over the last couple months in particular. And so this is accumulation of almost nearly 3 years of work, as you guys well know. We've had at least 4 information items over that period of time within the board packet, 16 communications and updates as we've moved along through staff reports. And so today, like I mentioned at last month's meeting and June's meeting, we've invited Matt Barnes, if you mind coming up. So Matt is the executive, one of the executive leadership team at GridsMe based in Flexham. So Matt has been working with us as an outside consultant. That started off early, and he'll go through that, but understanding the energy market, the CalISO grid, all those things we then transferred and communicated along the way to you as board directors and to the community and our customers and ratepayers as well. So Matt today is going to, we're going to share kind of this information. He's going to kick off, talk about some of the things and what's led us to this point. I'll fill in some gaps as we move along, and we'll close that out.
Yeah. I guess we'll start. I'm going to hand out just a couple of pages I have for you with a few of my bullet points on the process and where we are today.
Matt, do we have this
project on the screen?
I did not share it electronically, unfortunately. But I can, so we can have it for the file, for the record.
Maybe scan that.
Now, why don't you just allow us to pause for
sure.
a moment
so sure.
we can
yep.
project it on the screen.
Sorry about that.
No worries. It's supposed to be like looking.
Well, I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a boat ramp, though?
I don't know if they do. A couple times I've driven by it recently, I don't remember seeing boats out there, so, yeah.
I think Lake Orville's down to...
Yeah, they're down to Gravel Lake right on Saturday on the road.
What you got out
of it? I was only able to small bass boat, so I'm lucky to get some out of the boat.
Where four is it? It's like also apparently.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Are we going to have any brownouts, Matt? What do you think?
My guess would be yes, but I don't have any special insight into that than anyone else. Just knowing what we went through last August, you know, what CalISA did in late August, what happened there. That was a better hydro year. That was lower loads because of COVID. So my guess would be just at a high level, based on where we are this year, with lower water levels, lower hydro, and higher loads, I would guess yes. But the one saving grace in all that is that CalISA has added a lot of battery energy storage system capacity to the grid, which is going to be there to, you know, be there for that 4-hour window in the evening when the grid needs it the most. Likely is often the times when South Feather's units are being dispatched and ramping up. So that might be the one saving grace this year.
While Jamie's scanning that to load, maybe give a quick background on grid in general, but yeah. Not just hydro, your entire energy market and transitions. And
yeah.
Power, et cetera.
Yeah, we're a collection of about 70 subject matter experts in the power industry, and we range in expertise from, you know, electricity markets and CalISA, that's our bread and butter, power engineers, cybersecurity expert, network operations, and then NERC reliability standard compliance in generator testing. So it's a consortium of different services, but you know, we're really here to help our clients navigate some type of change within their organization or a change that they're facing in the power industry. And we do that by matching them with subject matter experts that we have in our firm. So yeah, it was fortunate enough to get to know South Feather a few years ago. And what you guys have in front of you, what Wraith and Dan have been navigating, is not uncommon. It's very common for a lot of our clients. It was my background before I joined GridsMe. I was with a collection of qualifying facilities in the power industry, a bunch of which were in California. They were rolling off old standard offer contracts, old PURPA contracts with PG&E and SoCal Edison, and you know, I had to help them navigate that transition. So not unlike where we are today with South Feather. We're good?
Almost.
Okay.
There we go.
Perfect.
Yeah. Let's go to slide 2, Art. So yeah, as Wraith has mentioned, we first became engaged with South Feather in February of 2018. And at that time, you know, we sat down with Wraith and Dan, and you know, they shared the information about where South Feather was at the time and what was in front of them, what the priorities were for the agency, the capabilities of the units, you know, got a handle on operating history and the capability of the 4 powerhouses. And then from there, you know, I went out to the market and started identifying who were potential off-takers that would be a good long-term partner for South Feather. And, you know, understanding that South Feather is looking for, obviously, you know, we want to be able to sell the power and monetize all the attributes that these resources provide. You need a good cooperative long-term partner that is creditworthy, you know, is going to work with you where we can get interests aligned. You know, obviously, I think we've tried to keep an open mind about that, about who that might be. But we also had to identify that PG&E today performs really 3 functions for South Feather that we needed to replace or find a plan to replace. If it wasn't going to be one entity, you know, how could we do it with multiple entities? But, you know, today PG&E is serves some of the generator operator function for South Feather. They schedule your power in the CalExco market, so they're called a scheduling coordinator, and then also they buy the power. So we needed, the ideal partner would be somebody who could function in all three of those roles as PG&E does today. So we identified, we had a list of, you know, 30 plus different entities throughout California that could be a match for South Feather. Some of those were municipal utilities, some of them were power marketers, you know, for-profit, you know, energy trading firms such as Shell Energy North America, who we'll mention in a minute again. Some of those are what are called community choice aggregators, is a term you guys have probably heard, CCAs, that they've exploded in California, and so they were a potential partner as well. So we identified that population, we started making phone calls, we, you know, went to their solicitations and identified, you know, what were they looking for in their solicitations. We responded to some muni utility RFPs. And said, you know, this is what we want to offer, this is the price and the terms that we'd like to get. We didn't get a lot of feedback through those RFPs and those solicitations, primarily because we were responding to utilities, and those solicitations were in Southern California. They were looking for something different than Northern California Hydro, rightfully so, that made sense. But we held a lot of bilateral discussions and two-way conversations with a number of these entities, the most serious of which that we entered into conversations with were Three Phases Renewables and Shell Energy North America. Both of those you could consider as power marketers, for-profit power marketers. We also entered into in-depth discussions with community choice aggregators like East Bay Community Energy and San Jose Community Energy or Clean Energy, and then also NCPA. And as we got into 2018 into 2019, we identified NCPA as the best all-around partner for a number of reasons, which we'll get into on the next slide. But that took us up to, you know, mid-2019, when we began entering into more detailed discussions with NCPA, going beyond just an indicative bid and indicative, you know, 1-2-page price sheet and getting into more specific terms. And then also, I mean, that was more than 2 years ago, right? So at that time, we were driving towards a July 1st, 2020 new PPA date. We expected and hoped that the PG&E PPA would expire June 30th of 2020. We all know that didn't happen, and that got pushed out about 18 months. So, you know, the negotiations slowed down a little bit, but at the time, we were driving towards a mid-2020 start with NCPA. Anything I'm forgetting there, Rick?
You know, that's a pretty good overview, but I'm glad you brought that up, because if you recall, you know, pre the whole force majeure conversation, our runway ended on June 30th, and as you recall, as we spoke multiple times, it was difficult to get PG&E to commit on what the future looked like. I mean, all the way back in 2018, there were verbal statements made to us by PG&E saying, hey, look, if your PPA was up right now, we wouldn't even be offering you a new one, we're going a different direction, those types of things. And so that's, you know, why we engaged with Grids to take a look at, you know, what options are out there, what are possibilities, etc. I will tell you, however, particularly with the force majeure conversation, what's drawn that project a little bit farther, and we'll get into, you know, what PG&E looks like today, because it's different than it was in 2018 and 2019. We were still evaluating possibilities, including last week, right? So, you know, we didn't just close the door. We've continued to, you know, understand, because the market and, you know, just the dynamics are changing so fast around us. And then, of course, with PG&E, as we were trying to zero in on, you know, are you in, are you out, what does it look like? Then they go into the bankruptcy process, and are we going to keep assets, or are we not going to keep assets? So that delayed the whole process. So it's been a while in the making to get to this point and have true line of sight. Fortunately, we know PG&E's position, where they're at, what they're willing to offer, not offer. We know all the work we've done with all these others that Matt have described. And so we feel good that we will be able to, assuming, you know, your direction of approval forthcoming, we will be able to bridge the delivery of energy from the South Fork Power Project to other entities. So yeah, Matt, if you want to go on to the next slide.
Yeah, so let's go one more. So where we are today, and it's my recommendation to Rafe and the board,
is that I believe the NCPA is the best long-term partner for South Feather. I've listed seven reasons why I think that's the case. First and foremost is I think that there's good aligned long-term interest there. And you know, by long-term, right now we're talking about an initial term of 10 years. They'd be more than willing to enter into a 20-year partnership with South Feather. I'm saying they're mostly aligned. They're not perfectly aligned for a few reasons. There's a number of attributes that your power projects deliver to the market in California. One of them is just wholesale energy, right? The meter spins a megawatt hour is a megawatt hour. There's also, so that's one value component. There's the value component of Sly Creek and Kelly Ridge. They deliver renewable energy credits because they're below 30 megawatts. The large units, Forbstown and Woodleaf, deliver carbon-free attributes. So they're not as valuable as a REC, but obviously in California, the carbon-free attribute from these projects, just like a REC, you know, per megawatt hour, that has a value to it. It's less than a REC, but there's still value there. Then there's also resource adequacy, which is the load-serving entities in California, NCPA's members being some of them, have to procure resource adequacy that is equal to a margin of safety above their peak load forecast. So they need the resource adequacy from these four units, what they call net qualifying capacity. That's a value component to these load-serving entities. And it's right now, it's probably the most sought-after value component. And then the last, the sixth attribute that these resources provide is spinning reserves to the CAISO wholesale markets. CAISO has to go out and procure spinning reserves as a function of their load forecast. And because of three of the South Feather units, because they're dispatchable, they can sit there most of the day and wait and wait and wait. And if the market needed them for reliability, they could ramp up and deliver. So that attribute is valuable, and it's called spinning reserve. So you have those six attributes that come out of these power projects, and all of them are valuable to NCPA and their members. Now, the way the PPA is structured, it's structured with a fixed component worth about, right now, $14.2 million per year. And that's a reflection of that capacity that's there. It's idle, and it's a function of the resource adequacy capacity. So South Feather and NCPA are both aligned to maximize that value. And they do that by increasing the net qualifying capacity of the South Feather units as much as possible within the laws of the CPUC and CAISO. So both parties are aligned to do that. You know, year one, NCPA and South Feather are going to want to sit down and say, how can we maximize that value? So that's a great thing. Where you guys aren't quite aligned is every variable megawatt hour you deliver to the system, you're going to get paid, I think, roughly $33.98 per megawatt hour. The value to that, to NCPA and its members, is going to vary, right? It's the value of that is volatile. It's a variable. It's based on the wholesale market prices, which change every 5 minutes, and certainly every day and every year. So that's where you're not going to be perfectly aligned. But you know, long story short, they're going to want to maximize the value of these units. That's going to benefit South Feather on the whole financially, and so I think there's going to be, you know, it ties into number seven on this, just a cooperative, collaborative nature between the two parties. The deal that NCPA has put in front of South Feather, you know, the $14.2 million fixed payment every year, obviously that provides you budget certainty and financial stability. Number three, like I talked about earlier, today PG&E provides three functions for you. NCPA is going to provide those three functions as well. They're going to, you know, share in some of the generator operator duties. They are a scheduling coordinator and will perform those functions. And then their members are going to buy the power. So it's a wrap package like PG&E is. They're very experienced in optimizing hydro, scheduling, optimizing, dispatching hydro in CAISO. So they know how to get the most value out of these resources, you know, and that benefits their members and you as well. They have an operations center, and their headquarters is, you know, less than an hour and a half away. Wraith and Dan can be there, you know, first thing in the morning if something goes wrong or they need to meet and sit down and talk through it. And then, you know, their member base, right? They represent their joint power agency, nonprofit. They represent a number of municipal utility members that are, you know, cities and municipal jurisdictions throughout North California. So, you know, you put all of those things together, and I believe it's the best fit for South Feather over the next 10 to 20 years.
Thank you, Matt. If you go to the second page, if you look at some of the content, which we've talked about in the past, but if you've got middle of the page, I've got agency valuation summary, just as a reminder, you know, there were a range of options. Matt has hit on that as we've spoken through here. We looked at those that offered 100% fixed pricing, which had lower risk, but it also had low value, so it'd be pretty hard to effectively manage particular upcoming FERC license compliance requirements, retcons, those types of things. And then what we're talking about here is a kind of a fixed versus plus variable pricing model. So you have moderate risk based on water hydrology, but other than that, you have full control over how to manage this project. So it's all about uptime and moving that and maximizing on the grid, but we're in control of that. It's something that we've lacked over the past 10 years with the PG&E power purchase agreement. Then there's pure profit sharing. So there are those out there, CCAs and you know some others, that you could you know go into a higher return, but it's awfully high risk, right? So you win together, you lose together, and some of those would have been very, very upside down budgets throughout the years. And the term lengths vary from 1 to 20 years. You know, one is not attractive as a commodities broker because about the time you ink that deal, you're already starting on the following year. And so Matt spoke to that a little bit as well. In terms of analysis, so, you know, what do we know about PG&E at this point? And they've firmed this up. In fact, PG&E is talking us out of continuing with them because they've moved to the central procurement entity. And so that the value of our portfolio is different. PG&E no longer will offer traditional power purchase agreements to any entity, not just South Feather. And they basically hinted at that over the last couple of years and firmed that up this year during 2021. The operating center that Matt talks about. So even if we chose to continue with PG&E, which is something we could do under a central procurement entity, our estimated revenue would be somewhere between $8 and $10 million annually in total. But we also need to find an operating center because they are going to no longer offer operating center. And so they're out there. We can find that, but that annual cost is somewhere between $500,000 to $600,000 a year, or you can implement it internally in the neighborhood of a $2 million investment. So that doesn't make a lot of sense either. The other challenge with PG&E is the way the CPE function will work. We would essentially go dark for calendar year, fiscal year 2022, meaning we would not be part of their CPE procurement plan for 2022. So our option would be try to talk them into extending for one more year under our legacy power purchase agreement, but that has complexities because of the force majeure topic. So PG&E is not our future and likely not many other separate entities. So PG&E will focus on their internal assets and not outside folks moving forward, it looks like. If you go to page 3, you can go back through a list of some of those we kind of zeroed in. You heard Matt talk about there was as many as 30 when we first started this. Who's out there? You know, it's just looking at what are our options. Let's do full feasibility study, SWOT analysis, et cetera. We zeroed that list down to around 12 or 13. Then that list continued to shrink over the last couple of years down to 5. And so we were really pretty serious for a while looking at 3-phase, East Bay, San Jose Clean Energy, Shell, and NCPA. So we certainly didn't target someone and zero in and just say we were focused on that. We just continued to understand this market. And then Matt talked about why we think NCPA is the best choice moving forward. We need to have something identified and in place so that when the force majeure term ends on December 18th of this year, by December 19th, we're still selling energy to someone, right, within the market. We think NCPA is that group. If you concur, you can ask some more questions of Matt, certainly, as we've had them come up. One of the things I'm going to talk about is we would then be putting another draft agreement in front of council. I'm sure you want agency council to review that. Agency council has not reviewed any level of detail or latest red lines. And so council would have an opportunity to speak to the board at August board meeting, and we'd walk through what are the risks versus rewards of a potential agreement with NCPA and decide what you want to do. If you would like to hear from PG&E directly, we could coordinate that with executives out of San Francisco, speak to the whole central procurement entity. Again, non-power purchase agreements would be called CPE, but we can get them in front of you as well if you want to take a look at that and understand it a little bit better. The goal of having Matt here today is you've heard for 3 years, right? 16 GM reports on this topic, 4 information items, our committee work, all those things you've heard from Dan and Ray. We felt it was appropriate. You now hear from someone who's not, isn't biased or have, you know, necessarily investment in South Feather and is conducting on our behalf of the analysis. And that's why Matt's here today. So please ask him some questions if you have some detailed questions.
So on that point, Ray, why would we want to hear more from PG&E?
Well, I wouldn't, but
there's no redeeming attributes to anything PG&E can offer us going forward.
No, I would say where PG&E could get interesting under the CPE model is if all of our units were recognized as green units, and maybe if we had more than 4, then maybe you have something of substance there, but you'd still have to find an external operating center. But the fact that only 2 of our 4 units are 30 megawatts or below, that CPE model isn't going to work for us financially.
And then Matt, can you talk more about the fixed pricing model with this?
Yeah, the fixed price structure that we is an alternative to what NCPA has put forward?
No, as far as with this, as I understood with what they put forward is this guaranteed 14.2 mm-hmm. plus a fixed pricing structure, correct?
Right, yeah, so it's 14.2, and that is an equation that is a function of a 625 a kilowatt month resource adequacy price times the number of net qualifying capacity units these units have that are assigned annually in CalISO. So that could ebb and flow. We think that there's some upside in there, year one or year two, where we can cooperate with NCPA and get that up even a little bit higher. So that's
basically standby pay for that. That's all.
Yes.
It's all standby pay. We're giving them not a single kilowatt, megawatt for that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And it gives us a forecastable number to budget with.
Yeah.
And then their benefit is this fixed pricing structure that's going to hold us to 35-ish per megawatt hour,
yeah.
when potentially we could be earning 55 like
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, we get that 14.2 today, fixed certainty. What we are giving up, though, in doing that is there will be times, right, where the CalISO market's going to go through the roof, and we're going to be sitting here going, how's that doing for us? Well, $34, right? It's on that $34.
And then that could be like 120 in a crisis.
Yep.
Well, and the all-in number is about 50. So if you look at the total off product offering, it's that 50 number. So let's say the market is now consistently at 60, month over month, year over year, then, you know, we'd be giving up something.
But that doesn't guarantee we ran all the time.
No, and I will bring you, you know, the world view of 2030 and show you what it looks like on the energy scale, mm-hmm. and certainly that has that content as well. You know, hydro is going to continue to diminish on its contribution over a period of time. It won't go away, but it's still going to shrink over the next decade as far as its ratio of contribution as more battery storage is put in place, you know, the continuation enhancements, and I say enhancements because, you know, I'm not a fan of solar, but, you know, the mainstream of solar, those types of things. So, you know, it's anybody's guess on what the value of hydro is going to look like long-term, year over year, in the outer years. It's why we're uncomfortable with the 20-year commitment, thinking more of a 10 with the ability to re-up, you know.
But even with the lesser percentage, there's going to be more power produced with all these things coming online. So that doesn't mean our contribution is going to be worth less. It could be worth more, right?
Could be.
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, one of the biggest competitors, I think, right now to South Feather, because I talked about those 6 attributes that your resources can provide, and, you know, 2 of the most valuable being resource adequacy and spinning reserves. All of the batteries coming online onto the CalISO system this year and in the next decade are competing against South Feather's key attributes. Your key attributes is that you're a dispatchable with storage, you know, resource. Your competition in that space is getting increased over the next decade. There is a scenario where we look out over the next 10 years and, gee, NCPA got a great deal with what they signed up. There's also a scenario that's the exact opposite of that.
Exact opposite. And we've targeted, you know, the majority of the energy we produce will go to the Bay Area, and why did we target, you know, those types of regions as well? It's for those factories that are working at night, right? Solar's not producing, so our competition is going to be battery storage.
And how does new battery storage cost, you know, cost of production, the cost of implementation, how does that compare to hydro?
It's huge capital costs, right? I mean, your advantage is you're built and you're there. And so, whereas battery storage today, I think it's around, the last number I heard is somewhere between $200 and $400 a kilowatt hour. So, you know, for your units being, you know, 121,000 kilowatt hours, you know, you kind of do the math to figure out what type of battery, what would it take to replace it. But it's, you know, obviously that the battery, it's a new frontier there, and they're learning, you know, by the month, by the day, what it takes to build and operate them.
And they'll last for 50 years.
Yeah, they're going to be. Unfortunately, we're probably going to look back 20 years from now and go, what were we thinking, calling that green with all these heavy metals? And what do we do to recycle them?
Yeah, problems just like solar.
Yeah, I think there's no better source of electricity in California's future than, you know, the South Federal units and the other units like it. It takes some of our policymakers some emergencies to realize that. But
what are we looking at time frame wise on the contract
for a new contract?
For a new contract.
Yeah, I mean, we would need to have something adopted in place in September, October timeframe on both sides, right? I mean, if NCPA, you know, they haven't agreed either, right, or their members, they're going to be sitting having similar conversations. So both parties, if we went the NCPA route, would have to agree and have something inked in September, October timeframe.
But we've been having this discussion. I mean, we're into, what, the third or fourth iteration of the agreement. So
the draft, yeah.
The gap between the parties has closed considerably, I would say.
And the number of years on the contract?
So it's right now the draft says 20 years, but a 10-year term with the ability to re-up for the next 10. NCPA was uncomfortable going below 10 years because all the work it takes to get in something like this. South Feather, at least unless you tell us otherwise, was uncomfortable with 20 for the very reasons we're talking about. What if, you know, year 11, the value of hydro and everything falls apart, battery, solar, everything else, we want to be able to go back and renegotiate.
So during those 10 years, we're kind of locked in at that,
yeah. There's one opener clause in there. I don't think Dustin's had an opportunity to review it yet, but it was pretty important to Dan and I to have some ability to reopen, and there's some language around that, but it would take a pretty significant scenario to be able to reopen that 10-year term.
And the by taking the 10-year plan with the 10-year option, what does that option cost us by us going with the 20 years today? I mean, it can't just be like, we want it, they don't, but we get it. I mean, it doesn't work like that, right? So how does...
So what does it cost us? You know, I'm in an interesting category, which is probably completely polar opposite of the industry expert. I think that our continued lobbying and work politically to get the 30 megawatt green recognition up to above 60 or 100, I think that can happen in the next 5 to 10 years with continued pressure within the state. The realization about how you recycle a battery, what do you do with photovoltaic panels when they start to age and depreciate, etc. I want to be part of that new value of hydro at that outer looking point. So I actually think that a decade from now, hydro is going to be viewed differently. I think the value could go up.
So what would be the downside of us taking that?
The 20?
Well, no, the downside of us taking the 10. When it comes time to renew the option, what does? I mean, that is it going to be just as good if we would have taken the 20 today? I'm not thinking so, because now they have some power.
So to be clear, Dan and I's suggestion is a 10-year term with the option to go another 10 if we want to. But that's a year 9. So year 9, you start talking about, are you going to continue with this contract in year 11, or do you renegotiate it?
Okay,
that's what we're proposing.
But who has what control do they have on the other side? What control does our partner have on that?
They can say no.
They can say no, and then
they can say no, we're going to end it.
And then we don't get the 10, so there's no guarantee on that.
That's
10
right.
Year option.
That's right. They can say
so
no.
There's our risk. What does that cost us potentially, the deal?
Well, it's going to cost us a year's worth of work to find a new buying entity for starters, right? And a new operating center. Yeah.
I fully agree with you on the value of hydro.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I understand.
And what's coming and all that. I do just feel like 10 years in this whole government kind of thing going on here, that's going to be gone.
problem like that, and we're going to be right here again working on another deal, whereas if this deal is as good as it looks now, if we had 20 years of this, well, we can not worry about it for a while.
So I guess the risk being that, you know, in a normal water year, we can expect maybe about $24 million in total revenue to the agency from this PPA for the next 10 years. So the risk being that years 11 through 20, energy prices collapse. Resource adequacy is now a low-priced commodity. You know, the renewable and carbon-free attributes are diluted because the landscape is so different. The marginal cost of electricity 10 years from now is much less today because of technology advancements or something that we can't foresee. So yeah, the risk being that NCPA gets to year 9, year 10, and they go, nah, the market's half of what our current PPA is today. So the risk in that scenario is that now we're faced with the next option being that we could go out and sell power at $12 million a year in a normal water year.
So that would have huge ramifications considering our annual operating expenses. Whereas the gamble would be that we could get double, which would be great, but
could be giving up $30 or $40 million a year, right? So it's just right. It depends on which side of the classroom you're on during the finance classes in college, right? It's time value of dollar. So I don't know. I mean, it's fair, valid question. But it feels like a long time. But maybe not in government.
Right. I firmly believe we can change this green credit thing.
I think so too.
But there is that risk.
Sorry. It's okay. I was just going to say, our predecessors were sitting around here, years ago, saying, hey, this power purchase agreement they did with PG&E was, the best thing since sliced bread. And then here recently, instead of being a $30 million a year contract, it was pretty bad. So, there's more guarantees with this, but I like the flexibility of renegotiating in 10 years.
Look at this year alone, right? So, we're halfway through the year, and what do we have, $4 million in revenue with PG&E right now? Even during a drought year, with this agreement in place, we'd be somewhere around 8.5, same point times sitting here right now.
Plus our 14.
Okay,
you're completely half. I got you. You're talking about that, not the generation portion.
Plus that time, so even in a drought year.
And we don't have an opportunity during those 10 years. If the Cal ISO pricing changes significantly, we're still kind of locked in at that year one dollars.
That's right, yeah. The only part of this that we can cooperate and work with NCPA to maximize the value is by increasing the net qualifying capacity units. But the rest of the PPA terms, South Feather, their revenue is not tied to the price of market prices for ancillary services, for resource adequacy, or for wholesale energy.
But we could renegotiate this, say, at year 5, and we got green credit for all of our solar panels. That would be
I defer to council, but I think that would probably be a change in law where maybe we could open up.
And that's what we're talking about, this ability of a reopener for something like that, to your point, is a change in law, something that's industry-wide change, not just us going, hey, on an extra dollar.
But if we were locked into the 20 years, that would be our opportunity with more security. If that's what we're banking on, it's a law change, and that's going to give us the opener, doesn't it?
My personal view is you're better off at 10 years. I don't have the contract, the draft in front of me, but it's a mutual offering, correct?
Correct.
So it could be exercised. In other words, it could be exercised by other partners. If you're making that decision in year 9, it may be, if you're optimistic, that the world has changed for the better from the seller's perspective. And we could cut a better deal either with NCPA or somebody else. So you're exercising that option to secure a better deal. If you're a pessimist, the market has swung in the buyer's favor, then they may have an incentive to exercise that option because they can acquire at a cheaper rate, right? So we don't know. The next 10 years, will determine
the next
what the right decision is.
I mean, we have a scenario with the, if it goes favorable, yes, there's all that extra money. But if it doesn't go favorable, if we were a small business, we'd be out of business because our revenue is going to be half of our expenses. So the 20-year avoids that really worst-case scenario in the long term. but it prevents riches. But then again, this is a public agency, so.
And that's what I struggled with, right? Because, you know, when we just went through a workshop on this very thing about, you know, our responsibility as a public agency is stability and risk management, where in private industry, maybe not so much, right? We'd probably get a little bit more aggressive.
And would half that profit be going to North Yuma?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that puts...
Yeah, anything above net revenues is it's great. Yeah.
So that puts downside on this agency as well. On the,
but make no mistake about it, as everything sitting here right now, this agreement benefits North Yuma just as much as it benefits South Fetterman, so.
Well, probably more since they're doing nothing for their money. We're doing all the work, but other than that.
So my, you know, if you guys are interested in us continuing to pursue the NCPA process, which we, you know, are requesting you to, we'd like to get the latest red lines in front of council. If you direct them to do so, review those, and then council present to us what the risks and rewards are, and if there's some, you know, real major changes in language, or, you know, can we manage through those towards the goal of approval. And you guys can be thinking and continue to talk about 10 versus 20, and we'll do some more homework as well in regards to that. NCPA would like 20, right? It was me, really, that slowed that bus down a little bit.
So two more questions, Matt. So does this partner have the financial stability if the market, say we did a 20, it all goes bad as far as the market, and without them we'd be making the 12, but we are with them, so they're going to continue to pay us the 24. Can they continue to pay us the 24 for another 10 years? I mean, I know that's a bit of a prediction.
Yeah. Of all of the potential off-takers that we talked to, they probably are on the best footing. These community choice aggregators, which you guys have heard a lot about, right, many of them are not creditworthy yet. Many of them do not have the financial backing and the, you know, sort of rate-making authority that the municipal utilities do. Entities like the for-profit power marketers, I wouldn't want to get into a contract with them where they're halfway underwater and, you know, we're sitting pretty, because they'll find a way to get out. And we know what PG&E has gone through in their history, and the two bankruptcies that they've been in. And again, you know, if they were in a contract with us and they were halfway underwater, I believe it'd be very tough for us to stay in it for the next 10 years. So, you know, with the municipal utilities, you know, you look at all the cities that make up that membership, and I'd have a tough time predicting what it looks like 10 years from now, but knowing that they've got rate-making authority, right, and hey, this is a contract that they're in, and they have to buy the power, and these attributes are still valuable to them. Maybe they're paying 2x the market price, but they got rate-making authority, and, you know, they can build it into their rate case. And it's not like, right, what it's going to be year 15 compared to what it is this year is going up. It's just that the market might around it change.
And then this $35 megawatt, is there any inflationary uptick on that, a few percent a year, or no, not that we were flat at that rate for 10 years?
That's how it's currently written.
Yes.
So if we go into a period of mass inflation, that could be.
Is that still negotiable, or are we kind of... Are you guys at the point where you guys negotiate?
I think we're at a point where we've squeezed that pretty hard, because however we've worked that, if we try to gain in one, something else is declining in the other. They're holding around that $50 all-in that we're talking about.
But, you know, my personal opinion, if we were to open up the negotiation, bringing 10, 20 years to the table, something that they want, then in exchange for that, you know, maybe we could look at an inflation adjustment.
To them on that, we can give more.
Yeah.
And I guess I do. I still look at the route of being a public agency and say we're making an extra $20 million a year. I mean, we have to spend it.
That's right.
And if we're already making, you know, $5 million with this secure contract over what our expenses are, I mean, it's going to be with our staff as is. I mean, spending another $5 million a year on expansion, that's kind of right at our capacity.
Well,
right now, anyway,
and remember,
right?
With the issuance of the new FERC license, which could be as we're sitting here, or it could be next year. Right now, that's anticipated to be $40 to $42 million just in the REC plan alone over the term of that license. So we do not have a lack of things that need to be addressed, for sure, particularly with the new FERC license.
push pretty hard to spend an extra $20 million a year.
Well,
I'd like to see
well,
it. That
you would have
be
to push hard
to
spend $20 million a year if you're doing it correctly.
Yes, very true, as we've seen.
It's easy to spend money.
Yes.
It's you know, getting the return on each dollar you invest.
One other question I have, too, is you talked about if the other two powerhouses became green, we would be hoping for that would be like a change in law. Can we just put that in there? I mean, is that something you guys would discuss, that if that was to happen, we kind of come back to the table and you know, change some, either looking at the cost of CalISO or you know, that opens up our ability to negotiate better terms?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can certainly have that conversation.
Yeah. Instead of just kind of hoping for the best.
And if that is in there as a definitive clause of this, then that takes the risk off of us on the 20-year contract, so we get more security. We still have the potential to get an increase with the law change. I guess I usually feel a little more risky, but in this scenario, I'm liking the 20-year deal. If we had that option of the law change, because I think that's the big play for us would be that, right? I mean, there's not really going to be anything else that's going to blow up in the contract for renegotiation.
Well,
is there Dustin?
Yeah, unimpaired flow. Something from the water board, you know, that like unimpaired flow would be so significant to the operation of the project that we would need to reopen it, would be my opinion. I don't know if Matt shares that, but that's the other thing out there that's really...
But that's in the negative way, that's in the other way, potentially, right?
The
green energy credit is positive, right?
Yes.
The other way is negative.
Yes.
So we're going to get that addressed in this contract as well?
Currently, change in law is defined fairly broadly. You know, it's not defined specifically. It's defined as a significant change in a regulation, the FERC mandate, you know, those types of things, or state law, federal law. So it's a large umbrella, and I would say, as currently written in the draft contract, unimpaired flow standard adopted by the State Water Board would be a change in law. On the positive side, as you mentioned, if we were able to change the 30 megawatt arbitrary threshold, that would be a change in law. And that, again, this is just an event that requires the parties to meet and confer and, you know, revisit the contract language.
So I guess one more question, Matt, for real this time. So what, by going with this 20-year deal, which it appears they would prefer, what more could we get?
Yeah, I mean, I think we could look at an escalator in there, you know, given that all of the pricing terms in this contract are fixed right now for a 10-year period. 20-year, I think it makes sense to go for an escalator there. Perhaps on, because there's two pricing components in the contract. There's the capacity value, and then there's the $33.98 per megawatt hour. So maybe we look at an escalator on both.
Matt, I have a question for you. I thought I heard you say M bars or bars earlier in your presentation. Did you?
If I did, I don't remember saying that.
I may have misheard. Is that an attribute that is part of this transaction?
No. So typically, traditionally, in the power markets, MVARs are voltage. You know, you support the voltage of the grid with the reactive power from the units. It is extremely valuable to any grid operator, any transmission operator that has to maintain voltage, to have resources that can provide that, and both in the positive and the negative. But traditionally, it is not compensated in wholesale markets. There are some units in the country, and this is a little bit outside of my wheelhouse, that file a FERC tariff to get compensation for it, but it's rare. But yeah, in the California markets, in any traditional power purchase agreement, a resource is not compensated for bars.
Is that something that you could see changing, that the market would develop around that?
Yeah.
See, that,
that's a good point.
I can see that being another item, maybe if you want to push farther out, that there's kind of new markets developing like this MVAR thing, which I have no, other than the term, I don't really know much about it, but I've just heard that it's a
it's a potential commodity that's associated with a powerhouse that could be compensated in the future. So so anyway, we can brainstorm about if the board's thinking maybe we ought to push for a longer term here, then these are some of the things that we could build into the agreement to allow for some flexibility to kind of reopen and, you know, relook at compensation in light of changed events.
And that would be very, I think, interesting for all of us to consider. We could meet all race concerns for future upside as well as provide that level of security.
Yep.
And certainly, Matt, I mean, if we're talking 20-year, I think then the escalation protocol, and we've talked about it many, many times, I think that would absolutely come into play for a 20-year.
Yep.
If we're doing an escalated protocol, that shouldn't be a 10-year. Maybe we can negotiate it in that 5 years or something like that.
Or just have a look at the table.
Yeah.
Negotiation's always risky, right? It can go one or two ways.
Yeah, so...
This looks great, full of promise.
Yeah, no comment.
I'm excited.
All right. Public comment, Mr. Shear?
Any public comment?
Nothing. Sorry. Nothing received in the inbox as of 3:32.
No comments online. Hearing voices.
So folks on the phone, remember it's *9 if you would like to speak.
Hello.
Mr. Sharp?
Can you hear me, Charles?
Hello?
Can you hear me, Charles?
Oh. Good afternoon. This is Charles Sharp in Oregon House. Thank you for putting me up in your nice little conference room. The press release where you characterize the Northview Board of District as having gone rogue is much too generous. The number of people in Yuba County that saw this release is about five people.
Charles,
holding up my hand,
Charles.
Five fingers plus one.
Can you hold off on the public comment? We're still working on if you have questions for Matt here.
Oh, okay. I was confused. Sorry.
Yeah, we're
I'm sorry to make that clear enough.
We did have one other.
Any comments specific to this tab information item?
Yes, you're on.
Are you asking for public comments?
We're asking for comment in regards to the topic we're currently discussing.
No, sorry.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Matt, you're welcome to stay, or you can exit out anytime you'd like.
Thank you. See you later, Matt. All right. Tab 5.
Okay, tab 5 information item is to highlight real quick and talk about the fact that Northview Water District has initiated a lawsuit against South Feather. You see that closed session, you know that. I thought I'd highlight the press release and communications a little bit as an information item. So, again, real quick, special counsel for Northview Water District, Dan Stouter of Boughton Jones, did file a lawsuit in New County. You can see the case number there if you'd like to look it up. It's a highlighted cites 6 complaints specific to the 2005 agreement. You can read those, breach of contract, all the way down. Upon filing the lawsuit, there was initiated what I call my words, marketing campaign, including some website content, a press release to the Appeals Democrat through the media outlets, and then also most recently a June-July 21 customer flyer. So I want to make sure that you as board directors are aware of that, as well as our constituents and ratepayers within the district. So what I've included today here on this information item is the special counsel Dan Stouter letter, the press release in the Appeal Democrat, June 28th communication release by us, South Feather, as you guys are well aware of, and then the North Eagle Water District customer flyer. All content and communications will be stored and are stored at the southfeather.com website under the North Eagle Water District tab. And as continued communications take place in regards to this topic that are available to the public, we will post those on that website for review and referral. And then if anybody has any questions, so if ratepayers or customers, any interested parties have any clarifying questions, you can contact the district directly at publicrelations@southfeather.com. So if you flip the page real quick, this was the immediate press release that, again, was scribed by Dan Stouter, Boten Jones Special Counsel for North Eagle Water District. You can ignore the date. You can see the date was June 18th, 2020. That must have been a detail slip by the law firm, because it actually should say 2021. And if any of you are confused by the heading, North Eagle Water District sues South Feather Water and Power Agency, not authority. So there was also some content accuracy there. So that should say agency. The date should say 2021. You can read the immediate release from there.
Yeah, that date mistake there. I mean, how amateur is that? My goodness.
It's since been corrected on the publications on their website. In terms of the Appeal Democrat, the reporter for this particular topic, Jake Abbott, actually reached out to South Feather to ask for commentary as well, to try to provide an unbiased read of the events. So again, we responded back to that. And for the most part, the Appeal Democrat then, you know, took snippets from what was provided by North Yuba and then our comments and put that in there so you can read through that letter as well. And then I won't read it. You can see my June 28th letter in regards to this. So basically our press release in regards to the lawsuit. So you can see all that content there. It is also posted on our website. And then if you're interested in the last publication of the North Eagle Water District Flyer, it's here in the board packet as well with content in regards to this case and also posted on the website. So again, purpose of this as a public agency is to make sure that everyone's informed and status is in place for where we're at through the process the best we can.
Appreciate the transparency of putting everything on the website.
Yeah, and we'll continue to do so. So nothing to hide from our end, so we'll get that posted and made readily available to everyone. So that's it on my comments on that information.
Okay. Any questions? What's that? Any public comments on that one?
Specific to tab 5.
Nothing in the inbox.
This is Donna Corson, Dobbins, California, NYWD customer. I thank you for your candor and transparency regarding your interactions with NYWD. It's helpful, informative, and appreciated. Thank you.
Other comments?
Hello?
Hello.
This is Charles Sharp. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
The press release where you characterize the North Eagle Water District as having gone rogue is much too generous. The number of people in Yuba County that saw this release is about 6 people. Kind of exaggerating, but not too many people saw it. I'm about the only person that's trying to tell the story of the water district. I'm kind of tired, and there's only so much I can do. I would appreciate some help from South Feather. I could put you in touch with a really good public relations person if you're interested. You have your attorney, I have my attorneys, and others have their attorneys. But getting people involved can make all the difference. I would think, my guess is about 70% of the people in Yuba County in the Water District don't know what's going on and they don't care. I've heard rumors that you've got to do it from the general manager. If so, now would be a good time to do it. The Water District accuses South Feather of breach of contract. Seems to me this suspend the contract and then a matter can be adjudicated. That's, you know, there are a lot of rooms you could play with that, I guess. We're dealing with a rogue organization that, you know, cheats and lies and laughs at the rule and just does whatever it pleases. And we have to take that into account and, you know, not play by their rules because they don't have rules that they're playing by. But anyway, so I want to thank you for your time. I have something to offer the board. Can I bring it to the door?
Are you outside?
Oh.
He is staged. Yes. Mr. Sharp arrived in our parking lot today, but we're still under managing the number of attendees under the governor's order. So we placed him in an isolated conference room, allowed to log in. Otherwise, he would not be able to participate today. You have what, Mr. Sharp? You have documents you'd like to hand to the board?
He's literally at the door.
All right.
Will
two of staff just temporarily step out that side door for me so I can manage attendees and I'll allow you back in? Okay, Mr. Sharp.
He just wants to pass this.
Okay, thank you.
So they only made two copies, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Council.
So I have clarity for vote participation. What were you handed?
Press release potentially from Territorial Dispatch. The yeah. Area North Yuba Water District has gone rogue.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thanks, John. Any other public comments specific to tab 5?
Ms. Renee is traveling. Her comments could fit either public participation or this tab. She asked if we could read them.
Sure.
Sure.
So it states, all thanks to South Feather to be so transparent with the flow of data. This way we could find out that North Yuba is only taking 15 CFS at SF-14. This after complaining so much that the port staff just doesn't have any capacity to serve the customers. We can probably all agree that they are showing their, I believe it's ill will and bad faith this way. Also, thanks for your press release from June 28th, including the correspondence that we would have never known about had you not been willing to publish this information. We as North Yuba customers are just grateful for your help in affirming that we are not the problem. The NYWD is problematic and we have genuine complaints, easy to see for anyone that can and wishes to read. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Art, can you capture that so I can include it in the meeting minutes?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other public comments?
So there was nothing in the inbox as of 3:44.
Thank you.
And no others online.
All right. So let's move on to our next topic, which ironically enough is public comments.
I'm not agenda items.
Any additional public comments out there?
Hey, so can we just real quick on the tab that we're about to switch over to, if somebody from North Yuba can confirm this for me on Mr. Stouter's press release, misdated June 18, 2020, he states that 100 parcels in Dobbins and Oregon House are being served with irrigation water. Is that correct? Charles, can you answer that?
That's not correct.
Is anybody being served by water at this time? On the irrigation
side? No irrigation water whatsoever.
Zero parcels. Okay.
Zero parcels for irrigation, yes.
What a shame.
There are about 150 parcels that get water if it's delivered. That's probably what he was referring to.
If delivered, there is no delivery.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Give you any comments on that?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to public comments on non agendized items. You may have to give me on your email so you don't come up here.
Still nothing as of 3:46.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Let's go ahead and move on to business items then. Tab 6. Evening.
So tab 6 is an opportunity for staff to present an edited version of what other former directors would have previously seen on an attempt to make edits to our current quarter page procurement policy. What you have in front of you was the work of the previous risk manager that has now been overlaid with council's edits. The time when this was in the process of being worked, council's efforts, I think, never commingled.
You're stretching my memory. This was a couple of years ago, right? Well,
so it's been a little while. Yeah.
Do you recall that, Eric?
It was, actually one of the first topics we tried to tackle as policies right after I joined the agency.
So, I just want to make, you know, in terms of the draft, the body of the work would look familiar to some of you that were already serving in 2017. Council took its opportunity and it kind of just sat up until now. So it's been on the radar for quite some time, and as stated in the kind of background of how we got to this point, you know, really in the most recent years, whether it be the FEMA reimbursement process, opportunity to seek Cal AES grants, really grants in general, we, in terms of staff, believe that it would be good due diligence to get this back in front of the board, make acknowledgement to the edits that council wanted to see, and try to get this back in front of you guys for potential adoption.
Was it tabled back in 17, or why did it not get taken care of back?
And this is not copy exact from 2017. So our current... Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to speak to that, or do you want me to?
Onboarding date was August of 2018, so okay. That's why I wanted to make it quick.
She received congratulations. Go finish this for us, please.
Yeah.
And so our procurement policy, as it reads right now, 440, is essentially a paragraph, and it's very, very generic. And what it lends itself to is the opportunity for, you know, abuse is probably the wrong word, but it's very loose.
Sure.
And so early on, you know, as any new general manager goes in an organization, you start evaluating things, you say, wait a minute, that's an area that is subject to some necessary change for generations beyond. And so we started that process with previous risk manager, but it was very, very myopic, a lot of content. We were working with council. It was just going too far to the extreme. So what we had done, and what we asked Jamie to do, is go back, review all that content, council's comments, and essentially adopt and overlay what general counsel had suggested, not what we were proposing, if that makes any sense at the time. And so an example of that would be on the first page under procurement and contract approval. This was actually, there was an A, B, C, and D. And so there was a fair amount of dialogue back in those days around who should have authority to procure, you know, based on a policy, without oversight, those types of things. So we've now presented and actually reduced some of those numbers and dropped that off. Took out C, took out D, lowered the spending limits and values, and tried to put something together that has some substance with the inputs from council. We just never followed it through. The risk manager transitioned out of the agency. It sat idle. We spent months recruiting a new one. And then this year seemed to be the year that we want to start knocking off improvements in policies. And so this is the first one that's been put in front of you.
If I can add a little bit of color here as well. The circumstances, we're an irrigation district. The circumstances under the law by which we have to competitively bid are actually quite narrow. In most cases, in almost every purchase, you do not have to go through a competitive bidding process. It's somewhat unique as a public agency. So that's the legal answer. But as a matter of policy, I highly recommend that you have some kind of process in place. You know, after all, at the end of the day, you're spending public funds, And this process helps develop a market so that if you're ever questioned, and this is a frequent topic of a grand jury investigation, or even just interested customers, landowners, they want to make sure that, that the public dollar you're spending is being put to good use. And so a policy along these lines helps develop that market that then proves that you're wisely spending your public dollars.
And potential lawsuits by disenfranchised potential bidders, right? You know, people suing because they didn't get it. So there's lots of benefits to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this overlays, Jamie's done a fair amount of work with neighboring districts, some that our council also represents. Make sure it falls in line with that. But certainly a one-paragraph policy for procurement needs bolstering. Sure. That's why we're laying this in front of you.
So on three on this, Jamie, I guess it would be that page three. Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
So when the agency does not receive a response to its announcements, requests, or invitations for bids or proposals, does there need to be some kind of a time limit in there?
So typically that deadline is included when a request for bid or request for proposal goes. There's a due date that is already published with each respective one. At least that's been the norm, if I can get the rest of stats and all. That, so it's under the pretense that that information is specific to each RFP or RFB.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Jamie, did you elaborate a little bit that you may have, apologize if I missed it, around through the Cal OES and FEMA processes.
That's,
did you speak to that?
Well, and that's really where I kind of highlighted in the background of really why we picked this back up. So when we look as we come out of 2019 winter storms, when we look at coming out of 2020 North Complex, again, the existing one paragraph doesn't really do that purchase process much good in terms of if the individual staff member doesn't take the three bid and, you know, stay aligned with when that type of work needs to be done, where else do we point to? And if we can't point to an internal, much to Dustin's point, it seems like it leaves a lot to be desired.
Sure.
So I know for me and working with other members of staff to get those bids, this helps from the risk management, future auditing, those types of things, that standpoint.
Sounds like it's, I mean, put together like best practices with neighboring districts, leave us happy with it.
Right.
And I think it's obviously a smart thing to do.
Well, and again, I mean, when I overlaid what the existing document was that would have previously been brought to the board at the time, and then obviously council had done a fair amount of redlining, and really just this is the
meat and potatoes.
Exactly.
Okay. I move approval to adopt the proposed edits to this procurement and contracts policy number 440. First.
Second.
Second. Any public comments on it?
No comments here. And I'll check emails. No comments via email as of 3:54.
Okay, thank you. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Three ayes, two absences. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Move on to the next tab.
All right, tab seven is a request for adoption of three resolutions specific to individualized annexations. So, and you're going to start seeing more and more of this as we're working through through the district and trying to get more folks connected, et cetera. So what I have today, instead of having three individual tabs, I bundled them into one tab, if you don't mind. And so we have an annexation, which is a residential parcel on Dunstone Drive near the intersection of Foothill Boulevard, Mission Olive. That would be an irrigation, annexation for irrigation eligibility. The second one is a residential parcel on Pioneer Trail near the intersection of Mount Ida Road. That one is also irrigation, annexation for irrigation in the district. And then the third is currently it's a vacant parcel off of Longbar Road at the intersection of Ordine Boulevard and Orange Avenue. That is a domestic annexation And then a structure will be constructed and built on that property, assuming it goes through the whole LAFCO process. What you have in front of you is each of the initial applications submitted to LAFCO with all the descriptions and requirements associated with each individualized annexation. Included in there is a notice of exemption, but then there is a correction that needs to be made. So when you look at the notice of exemption under the categorical exemption, got it listed correctly as 15319B, but on the following page on each resolution, that needs to be modified. I have on the second page of each resolution where it's now therefore be resolved under the California Environmental Quality Act. While technically it could fit within that 15061, the more appropriate number that needs to be placed there and signed, if you approve, Mr. President, by yourself and myself, would be 15319. So that's what really should be listed there on each resolution. So assuming the board adopts and bless you, approves the resolutions, I would correct all three of those to the 15319B and then seek your signature on those as well as mine. What we are still waiting on are plats and legal descriptions. So those are being performed by a survey and engineering firm in Chico, California. So as soon as we get those back from that firm, then the entire package would be submitted to LAFCO to go through their board process approval and move into annexing these into the district. So far here to date, we've successfully annexed two parcels in. This would make a total of five, and we still have a list of another half dozen to continue to work on and that we know of at this point.
That's exciting.
What did this roughly cost these individuals for this process?
So for the irrigation ones, they're in the range of about $4,000 to $5,000 total. LAFCO fees, state fees, our work here, and then the engineering for plats and legal descriptions so far is running about $640 versus what it previously used to run with a different outfit. It was over $3,000, $3,500. For the domestic one, they're going to be somewhere around $10,000 or more because you have system capacity fees and those types of things for the domestic system. So an annexation can run, I would say, $6,000 to $10,000 in rough order. The size of the parcel becomes a factor. I know we're working with LAFCO, so if it's a large parcel that only one dwelling is going to be on, we're working on what that cost is, so it's not $500 per acre times every acre of that property if there's only one dwelling. That would be the case with the domestic annexation here. So it's still not inexpensive, but now you have water service.
It's a value for what they're getting.
Yeah.
It's an incredible value.
So we're requesting your consideration and adoption with the approved red line to change on the resolution to the more appropriate number that should be identified, which other than clean up and CPR for signature.
Okay, I'll make a motion. I move adoption of resolutions 210707, 211207, and 211507, approving annexations of APN 027-010037, APN 079360012, APN 033-010083, and submitted applications for annexations to LAFCO.
Can we confirm, Director Hickman, that that's the, with the amendment that...
With the amendments that...
Concerning the CEQA exemption.
Yes.
Second that motion. Any public comment? Chapman and Mr. Bird out there excited that everything's going to be annexed?
Nothing received as of 4 p.m. in the inbox.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Three ayes, two absences.
Thank you, board.
Thank you.
I hope to make this pretty routine throughout
yeah,
the next year.
Exactly. That's great.
Bring into the district. So.
Come up with a goal for the year. All right, thanks. What's that?
Three?
No. Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. Well, you said you already done two. It's an hour and five. How about 30? Okay. Next tab. Jamie, back up there.
Can I ask me again?
Sounds excited.
Well, actually, hopefully this one does. We can get some approval going on this one. It's desperately needed. So over the past couple months, we have noticed a significant increase in traffic as it pertains to the bolt fill station here for 2310, both in some cases for traditional potable water services. Unfortunately, we've definitely seen a stray away from that into some very creative, less official ways of attempting to move water. And everything from U-Hauls to Home Depot totes being filled with water while we're waiting for larger tanks to be filled. So creative has been an understatement in some ways. Overlaid with recent Butte County proclamation in terms of drought and illegal water hauling, really across the board becoming a very active and volatile statewide issue. We as staff are proposing significant changes to the bulk service within the rules and regs, and that would allow a person to be coming to the agency with the ability to obtain bulk water in one of three ways. First way, number one, would be a district approved water hauler's ability to use the filling stations, and the requirements are clearly spelled out in rules and regs. Some changes to the construction meter program that already exists, and some new requirements. Also some true ups in the flat rate fee for that type of program, and then a completely new special use permit. So a special use permit would be for a parcel owner, whether that be original parcel, annex parcel, or railroad commission, because again, they are entitled to the raw water, with a fair amount of required material as well. And that would be a permit that would need to be renewed and would have a validity of 3 months. So multiple reasons why we believe this needs to take place. Again, everything from the fact that this facility, from a traffic standpoint, is not equipped to continue at the pace that we're running at. We're seeing anytime 5 to 6 trucks deep back there in our courtyard. So our guys are oftentimes impeded by needing to get in and get material in their own courtyard, while water trucks, personal vehicles, those types of things are awaiting their turn in line. The increase in what we're calling enterprise use, so folks that can acquire a water truck, maybe not making the full stretch to go and be potable, but have the ability via water truck. That water, we have a requirement with the State Water Resource Control Board that it needs to stay within our district use. And right now the slips are not showing that that's the case, which is a pretty significant issue. You overlay that with drought conditions and it becomes an even bigger issue. Accurate reporting is something else that we think we're losing track of at this point. And really, I would say from a timing standpoint, the other thing is I'll be coming back to you guys here in a bit to also ask that the board adopt a water theft and unauthorized use of water services and fire hydrants. And really, we need both of these to coincide so we can have foundation to stand on, whether it be the Butte County Sheriff's Office that reaches out, or just have some type of true up in terms of admin and what a good process needs to look like so our staff can be a little more equipped to handle what we're seeing.
This is a sizable proposal and change, but I mean, Jamie was being polite when she talked about, you know, the variety of water haulers, etc. I would say at least 7 out of 10 should not be in the road. They've exceeded the weight limit. There's tire issues. There's a number of things. We've had tires blow out as they tried to leave the actual parking lot. I mean, it is a mess. It is a road hazard. Someone's going to get hurt.
Can, And just so we are clear, we at this point also feel like we've exhausted, whether it be the roadworthy issue and speaking with CHP officers directly on the personal vehicle aspect of it, the potential commercial vehicle aspect of it, and we have not gotten a ton of help. Their hands are very much tied based on loopholes and how existing law allows most of these water haulers, most is probably a more appropriate word to use, to get really away at this point. Sorry.
No, you're fine. In terms of construction meters, this is also a new change. So what we have historically had trouble with is a construction meter gets issued $910 deposit part.
Yep.
Off it goes. Getting the readings back, getting the meter back, you know, what it's really intended to be used for. Now they're chained on hydrants, so anyone that can pull up and draw into a water truck. You know, there's a purpose and a reason behind a construction meter, and so we're asking to instill that. So it's, you get a meter, you go do what you need to do, you know, for the job you were assigned to do under the construction meter, then you return it. What's the motivation to get it back? So that's what that policy is about. There would be some negative feedback, you know, a $2,500 deposit. Someone's going to say, well, it used to be $910. The problem is when they pay a $910 deposit, that's essentially rough order of magnitude the cost of a construction meter or hydrant meter. So they view it as, well, that I own it.
Yeah.
This way you've got motivation to get it back, get credited back your deposit. You know, so it's those types of things of trying to manage that process better.
In addition to that,
yes.
We do not have the ability to add those to collections. So if they skip on that account, we're out that money. So a higher level deposit will also benefit the agency.
And then special use permit, you know, other water districts do issue permits to draw water, those types of things. What we tried to do, as you well know, we have been trying to get people off of those hydrants that are improperly using those hydrants. And then that shifted to getting them here to Oroville so we could understand what we're dealing with, and it's flat out of control. I mean, Jamie's not joking. We have enclosed U-Haul trucks that come in full of totes and fill up. And they'll actually argue with us. No one complies with anything we're doing right now. I could read you today's letter. I won't, but I could, about how the Cal Fire in Palermo is constantly trying to get this one particular individual off the hydrant, stripping the threads, using a crescent wrench, hammering the system like you saw in the staff report. There's some analytics Jamie will talk about in a bit. On that. Well, that person also comes here, including today, refused to properly fill out a tag, and then told us we're being rude. I mean, the rules are there are no rules with these folks.
Correct.
So we need an adoptive policy so that we have something to go enforce and get some control over this.
Rafe, would you mind speaking to the change in use of district rather than agency? I know Jamie highlighted that, but I just wanted to your tie the two together.
Sure. Obviously we're South Feather Water and Power Agency. That encompasses what we identify as Power Division, Water Division. The reason you see district populated throughout here is because our water distribution system, our water availability is tied to our district, right? We have a sphere of influence, a place of use, but then in terms of district, inside those parameters, you're either original, annexed, Railroad Commission, or you're not in the district. And so the word district actually means something when you're talking about water conveyance within this district.
Is that an issue also when a lot of water is going outside the district?
Currently, yes.
Which could be outside of our place of use, or it could be to a piece of property that is not in the district, right? Not railroad, it's not annexed, it's not original.
Right.
If they want to use water and have some sort of special use permit, they need to be considering annexing into the district. In particular, we need to stop these that are traveling or turning left and leaving the district.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the use of the word district.
I think it's important and relevant.
When I got here, it just felt like an agency. Today, it feels like a district.
Yeah, and there are some topics that are agency and other topics are district.
So within this, so this concept still, I guess I have a hard time with the concept of people actually using fire hydrants to fill from. I mean, those for emergency use with the water hammer, the thread stripping.
Right.
I mean, those need to be operational for the people of
our
district. And so I guess I'm still at a loss why we allow them to use emergency hydrants to fill up for non-emergency uses.
And I will tell you, it's an excellent question.
Because I think we've...
About 3 years ago, you know, I in particular got caught up with these mutual aids, right? We had disaster, you know, with fires in Paradise, that moved on to Berry Creek and Feather Falls. We had Bangor, the wall fire. And so we were trying to be good stewards, and for cleanup purposes and those types of things, we were allowing contractors to come in to help and assist with that cleanup and recovery, to draw with construction meters, and that has just morphed out of control since that point. Looking back, you know, I still think it was the right decision we all made on mutual aids and all those things, but it's created something today that has expanded far beyond its original intent and purpose. And now we have water haulers that are primarily delivering to agriculture. And that's from San Diego to Siskiyou, right? And it's not just Butte County. And that's really what our challenges are. I mean, maybe I'll just read the Cal Fire one real quick, do you mind? So, you know, this is from a Cal Fire employee. You know, I wanted to inform you that Miss X, I won't say her name, Miss X has been told by several fire department personnel and by the deputies of the Butte County Sheriff's Department that she is stealing water and she needs to stop immediately. So this is a fire hydrant directly across the street from the Cal Fire station in Tarnal.
Station 72.
So they sit there and stare at it and go out there and try to stop this person. Since those encounters, she has continued to fill up her water tender illegally at multiple fire hydrants in the Palermo area. She does not have a meter and is using a crescent wrench to remove hydrant caps and to turn on the hydrants to access the water. We've noticed the crescent wrench is causing damage to, this is Cal Fire speaking here, damage to the caps and the stems, which could make it difficult for the fire department to use the hydrant should there be a need during an emergency. Miss X is very confrontational with fire department personnel and feels as though she is entitled to this water without penalty. According to fire department personnel and several other community members, Miss X has filled her 2,500 to 3,000 gallon water tender 15 to 20 times over the past few weeks. The license plate, et cetera, et cetera. This particular individual, we've cited twice to Butte County Sheriffs. Her vehicle was impounded at least overnight.
Yes.
She continues to come into this location as well and will continue to tell everyone that no one can deny her. The rules are, there are no rules.
So
why we need a policy.
Cal Fire, this is actually their second email as it pertains to this individual. So just so we're, in terms of exhausted, I don't think we're being dramatic when we say that too, when we speak about this individual. Two open Butte County Sheriff case numbers, multiple incidents. Cal Fire reached out mid-June with a similar type email, included photos, so the documentation is all there. And then, if I may, and we're kind of jumping back and forth, because again, this is more kind of hydrant-based, which is, I was going to catch up with you guys in the hydrant policy. This here are all water hammer spikes in the system. This is one hydrant over 1 day.
So Rick Lease, our industrial maintenance tech, we have, you know, technology, and he's moved that. And this can show you what John Shipman and this team are dealing with in our construction team.
How many filling stations do we have?
Bulk filling stations? Just the one right here.
I agree with giving the people access to the water, but I'm still, I guess I have to say now I've moved to oppose to them taking it from an emergency. You shouldn't be using an emergency device for non-emergency purposes.
Agreed. And when we, you know, we've had line of sight, we've talked about it at some point, having a more accessible bulk filling station. But one of the things we realize is, like, look, our goal is not to deny water. Our goal is for you to do it correctly.
Right.
And we're proposing one of three mechanisms, right? An approved potable water delivery system, has insurance, has all those things that come fill up, they go do their business. A construction meter under these parameters, often intent to get back, project specific, or a special use permit to get that water. So we're not saying no. What we're trying to do is we're trying to clean up the mess that's happening right now with how the water's being filled up and what it's being used for, et cetera, without following any guidelines.
I think you did a good job here. I think it's well written. But I guess, again, I don't see how we're ever going to get it under control with all these emergency locations. There's no way to enforce as long as they have access to emergency hydrants. And the only way to narrow that would be to just ban emergency hydrant use for non-emergency purposes. But I do agree we would need to have at least, what, 3 more filling stations to make that right to the people.
Yeah, because you're referring to the word construction meter, right? You're thinking construction versus not. Yeah,
I agree. But just in general, that a fire hydrant should be there.
Cal Fire would prefer
for
that.
A fire. That's what Cal Fire wants.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's the only way to guarantee the integrity, the ongoing integrity of that hydrant is to have only the fire department using those for emergency purposes.
And I would probably be remiss. So we've had we've kind of highlighted the law enforcement and the connections that we've made, particularly with Butte County Sheriffs, because that's where we're seeing the issues, not in the OPD section of our area. This has been Butte County. We had Cal Fire, the battalion chief, in for the Palermo area in just a couple weeks ago, because this conversation is not unique to South Federal Water and Power. Not only a statewide issue, but even at a Butte County task force, the drought task force, the idea of hydrant locks and a statewide key are being discussed in a public setting. That particular hydrant, this particular issue goes far beyond. So in terms of Cal Water being highly sensitive to the idea that they could attempt to connect and have a non-functioning hydrant is very much a reality at this point.
And that's all of us.
Right. Well, especially when we've worked and made attempts to improve, insurance ratings and what can we do to ensure that water is readily available when they need it, mm-hmm. to only have to come back to you guys today with such content.
And we will get to that when Jamie speaks to a proposed water theft policy around enforcement around hydrants. I mean, look, if the board says we don't want you to issue construction meters, period, right? If that's the option, we'd rather you find a way to go install another bulk fill station, a kiosk station for that scenario. We can look at that. But we still have, so even if the construction meters don't exist in this policy, we still have a water theft policy addressed and how to enforce from those emergency outlets.
Yeah. And to make an inadequate policy, really, you have to. It has to be absolute. It has to be so simple that nobody should be hooked up with the fire department. That's the
correct.
Only way. All this is well written, but how are you going to implement and enforce?
And I
still see, even with that though, it's still, since you don't have that absolute,
yep.
Issue going on, how's it going to be addressed? It's not going to be a priority for law enforcement. It's not going to be a priority for anybody unless you make it a significant penalty, and nobody should be using those hydrants but fire personnel. But with that caveat, I would say that to implement that, I would say we would need to install some more bulk filling stations first.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'll go along with this for now, but my caveat is we need to, in a year from now, this needs to be going the other direction. We need to basically emergency use for emergency use.
And it's going to be enforcement, right? Because one of the arguments that we hear when we talk about bulk fill, like down here, is, well, it's so far to drive, right? So they're going to the nearest hydrant they can find. So enforcement is going to be the key.
Right.
Yes.
And just so we're clear, what's administratively written here, it's not like we go tell the staff tomorrow morning with implementation that they become the water police.
Yeah. You still have, with the policy, you have no water police, because again, it's not anybody's priority unless you make it absolute.
Agreed.
You have a real crime, you have an easy enforcement mechanism because it's so clear, right? That's a pickup truck with a water tank hooking up to the hydrant. They shouldn't be there. It's not a red truck.
Correct.
That makes it simple.
I'm speaking for staff here real quick, but if the board was to come back and say item 2, we don't want the use of construction meters, and those that are in need of that need to come to the district right now and fill up, draft some language around that, I'd be open to hearing that.
The word that comes to mind based off of Director Hickman would be something along the lines of like a moratorium on construction meters until we can
we're
reissue in the future.
Exact.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about more terms like construction meters. I'm talking about emergency items
for
emergency.
Right.
It translates to the same thing.
Right.
Let's just hit it right at the source. Instead of construction meters, emergency hydrants for emergency use.
Right.
Unfortunately, I've had a number of years working with these problem accounts. The issue that we hear quite often, location, you know, I have to drive across Warville to fill up if there was to fill up here, but also the time. So we open at 8, close at 4, and if they're having a construction project, that's in the evening, or they're going on weekends, whatnot, where do they get that water from? So,
and that's where Director Eggman's going off the kiosk. We need to have more locations.
Until we have a kiosk.
Yeah, and I sympathize with those problems. I mean, those are significant. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I get that. But again, by the same token, the fire readiness and the fire emergency, I think, especially today,
takes priority.
It takes priority over everything. There's nothing left if it burns.
Correct.
That's right. You know.
So I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, we could do what we're talking about here, having the idea that we're moving forward with that idea. I think if we just shut down all other hydrants right now, I mean, the problem at the yard right here would just increase tenfold.
Well, and then they got hydrants in the neighboring water districts as well, because that's happening.
Sure.
Right. You know, the hotspots are after Warville.
Right.
But, I mean, I like the idea of having designated spots that, I mean, I live in Claremont. I drive, I mean, you see people fill up all the time. You know, every now and then you'll see a meter, but there's a hydrant on Lone Tree and Ofer. I mean, that one's always getting hit.
Yep.
The one next to the post office out there, someone's always turning something that one on.
And Public Works is getting on us about road damage.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, a bulk kiosks scenario out in Palermo, a bulk kiosk scenario is closer to Miners Ranch Treatment Plant / Lakeside Market, and then the one here at Orville would probably serve that purpose.
Correct.
And our goal here, I'm sorry to cut you off, is, you know, bulk fill will eventually migrate to the vacant lot next door once the hospital work is done, so it's not interfering with traffic.
Right. So maybe we look into that and see what the cost of doing something like that would be. I think that, we're all pretty pro-construction and you know, we don't want to limit that, but we also want to, you know, be reasonable to the, you know, hydrants and just the district in general.
Right.
It almost kind of appears to me that with this demand, it's not going to go away. If we had a fee that was, you know, a little more in line with reality, like $10 a load instead of $5 a load, I mean, it could almost be a staff kiosk. Maybe you get on. You know, 24/7 staff kiosks. There's an employment opportunity.
Yeah.
That's a challenging topic, right? So on two fronts. One, you know, we need to be charging actual cost of service, right? So you figure out, you know, one unit is 48 gallons, and so a tank, typical truck, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 gallons.
But that and unit, then, though, is delivered with no drama through a pipe. Right.
Right.
Whereas this is delivered with a bunch of drama and a bunch of added expense and hassle.
And then the potable piece, right? You need to make sure that someone doesn't roll up, because we're talking about kiosks that are technically producing potable water, but this can't go into non-potable certified apparatuses and then go serve a dwelling. Right?
Right.
So that gets tricky as well. But you're right. And we've heard from varying people, we've heard that it's costing water, what do you say, $60?
Something like that a load.
In Nevada County, $60 or $80 a load, $8, $3, R5.
Do we have people come from other counties just to load up
on water? We're not to counties yet. Everything that we've seen up to this point, do have, actually, I take that back. There's one coming from
Yuba County
coming over.
Unfortunately, it weighs 7.5 pounds per gallon, so that limits the
distance. And that's actually 8.3.
It's 8.4, and that's...
The one that comes from Yuba County is the nicest water truck out of all of
them. By far.
And it's legit.
That's
a sleeper on it and everything else.
Right.
It's all the others that are, you know, renting new halls of mine.
It was a business family that fills up with water.
And you follow them down Riverdale Boulevard, and water's just flowing out the back.
Oh, I wonder, yeah, I was driving back the other day, and by the time you got where you're going, I mean, for 50 minutes and there was two-thirds of the water
was already gone.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yep. I was going to joke and ask if we could just lease Mrs. X's property there and have a bulk filling station there. Give her a 2-inch meter.
So Mrs. X's property is in question right now.
Right.
Where's Mrs. X's property? Is on Plummer Road?
Well, Mrs. X doesn't actually own property.
Okay.
So, as we can see so far.
Okay. And really, if I may, Rick, too, based off of that email that came in today and then other kind of community input that it sounds like CAL FIRE is getting in terms of walk-ins to the station, you at some point would likely end up receiving at least a call, because this is beyond just CAL FIRE. I mean, this is, we fielded calls with active construction meter accounts, mm-hmm. and they're saying, I'm on my cell phone, I'm sitting in my truck, I have a valid, legit account with you with a legit meter, and I'm waiting for a guy without a meter, not legit, never seen him before. What are you guys going to do about it? You know, so there's a sense of frustration on those that are still out there trying to do the right thing in the world. And yeah, it's not always friendly to have to tell them that we acknowledge, again, too, if we can start pointing towards something, it doesn't give the perception that we are just sitting back mm-hmm. thinking that this thing's just going to go away on its own.
Sure.
But what I'm hearing clear is, you know, we need to have a goal of getting non-emergency personnel off of hydrants.
Right.
I've heard that as a goal.
Right.
With the expansion of both filling stations
right.
and part of the locations. Is that fair to summarize?
That's reasonable.
Okay. Because believe me, if you adopt our requests and suggestions here on construction meter, special use permit, potable water, that doesn't come without a fair amount of controversy. We're going to have some management of that, although it'll be rough the first few days,
sure.
and they're all going to go somewhere, and the question is where.
Right.
They're going to find some other location.
Sure.
So,
yeah, that's true.
And if approved, you know, we'd like to get this language shared with the neighboring districts. We want to get this language shared with CAL FIRE, Butte County Sheriff's
sure.
Office, so everybody is on the same page if this adjustment at least has been made from our district standpoint. You know, and the other districts, unfortunately, may, you know, we hope that it helps control our situation, we likely know that it's going to push the problem somewhere else.
And by the way, for all of our, you know, one thing to provide water, because we're not denying water, we're saying
right.
here's the step sheet. We have to track hold. We have to
right.
report that
right.
water's
right.
there.
Right.
So.
Well, let's get it approved, eh? Okay, I move approval to adopt the proposed changes to the bulk service section within the agency's rules and regulations.
I'll second that.
First, got second. Any public comments?
No comments from the email. That's a 428.
Is Mrs. X out there on the line?
No, Mrs. X on the line.
She may be out there right now.
And no comments online.
She's had to change your heart after listening to this.
Yeah,
she now wants to do the right thing.
I highly doubt that, if I'm being completely honest.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Three ayes? No, the two absences? Okay.
Thank you, guys.
You're back up.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's that time of year for me to be the bad guy again. I will tell you, this is the first time that we've actually added active accounts to the tax rolls. And you can see by page 3, you'll see how many active versus accounts that are actually shut off. So they're, out of the 40 accounts that we've added to taxes, only seven of them were discontinued accounts.
Is that because you can't turn off the water currently?
Correct.
Okay.
This process started with approximately 150 accounts that were severely delinquent, and we, our front office staff and management have been able to get this down to these 40.
Okay.
When you look at those values, you figure an average water bill is $26 to $30 a month. You can see this is a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, that's a no-brainer, right?
50 months.
All right, I move adoption of Resolution 21-7-1, authorizing 40 accounts for a total of $15,982.74, including fees, be added to the 2021-2022 Butte County tax roll. First, second on? First and second. Any comments out there?
Sorry, Art, on the wrong. Nothing in the inbox as of 4:31 p.m.
And no comments online.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Three ayes. Two absences.
Thank you.
So bear with us. I know we loaded you up this month.
It's okay.
Happy lifts.
No worries. I mean, something like that would just get it done, and there's no reason to discuss that one more.
All right. So it's me again, tab 10.
I know.
And this one, again, is more or less pointed towards an actual theft policy, particularly as it pertains to the water hydrants, the ability to manage or at least point enforcement into the right direction. The county had also made note that ultimately State Water Resource Control Board does have an enforcement over illegal hauling and those types of activities as well. So again, this is our best ability to manage what we know to be repeat offenders, particularly like the individual that we randomly discussed throughout our time here. You know, the data set on water hammering, why that's crucial, water consumption importance. I mean, really, they both just kind of coincide with one another as we view it right now. The meat and potatoes of this policy we used from another district and then went back in and confirmed some penal code sections, those types of things, but went out, looked at how other agencies and other districts were handling it, and then put an overlay together with what you have in front of you.
So who's gonna force this?
So when Butte County Sheriff calls at 10 p.m. with an individual that they've pulled over at a hydrant, instead of calling and asking the agency if we want to pursue, they will then have this on file with a direct ability. So it's basically advanced directive.
So they're going to write.
They can add and cite immediately.
And we coordinated with the SO, they're going to actually do this.
They have been, but they call us first and seek our approval and say,
right.
What do you want to do? Do you want us to cite them? We say yes.
Okay.
This just has that so that they all know they roll up and you're stealing water, the issue of citation.
It's the blanket offer within South Feathers Boundaries that we have zero tolerance.
Okay, nice. So I guess on these prices, I mean, isn't like the HOV lane violation like $498? Is it littering $1,000 to get for your first offense?
It is. And
this is pretty reasonable.
I know.
This might encourage that.
So we definitely encourage that. You know, with the prices were discussed and we went, you know, is this too high? Is this too low? You know, in terms of looking at what other districts and other agencies are doing, this falls in line statewide.
Yeah, I mean, these are kind of the general rule of thumb up and down the state, but I don't know.
They're statutory. These numbers are set forth in what's called a water conservation program, which we're not currently operating under one, but they're set forth in statute. I will tell you
like this. 1970 with those prices?
No, this is an ongoing topic in the legislature, you know, because water theft everywhere is becoming more and more of a problem. And then, you know, it's health and safety issue too, primarily, because it's not just the theft, it's the backflow, or lack of backflow, I should say, feeding into the system. So I can see these numbers changing, but I believe they're currently statutory.
And we can't exceed that without doing what?
No, I would say you can't exceed them, but you are charging this penalty plus the cost of an estimate of what was taken.
Well, I mean, that's
so you can get into a felony area if it was I'm assuming we would charge actual cost of service. These folks wouldn't get the subsidy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Currently
so,
and that's
being charged.
Right.
Actual cost. Good. I mean, so it's theoretically possible that somebody can get into felony territory rather than misdemeanor.
And again, the felony threshold is $950. Because the other thing that this would also hold them accountable for is in the event that they're connected and luck should strike them, that a main line goes and they're connected in that water hammer, they're on the hook for the costs associated with that as well.
Right.
So there are other lingering fees outside of just three, part A, B, and C, if you read further down into there are potential for more. And then obviously the idea that $950 for a felony.
So in theory, your third offense could be a felony issue if we had a DA that was motivated enough to do something about that. Right, the DA needs to... I don't know. Is the DA's office coming around?
We've not heard anything. No.
In fact, the illegal water hauling,
even on the Butte County side of things through the water conservation website, was new as of yesterday. I mean, we've been checking that often. I mean, we are literally out searching to try to, you know, make an attempt or join forces with anybody that will listen to try and correct or at least rectify the issues out there and gain some momentum.
I think it's the firefighter key ultimately, but until then, right, the hydrant locks. I mean, ultimately, that's the only way you're going to stop this problem.
Or make
filling stations more convenient.
Right, and I think for us, that's, yeah. I mean, in news articles and different things, I mean, you have districts that are literally going out and reevaluating where hydrants can be pulled from the system and where insurance would absolutely allow them to do so, or even if folks have other means or whatever it may be, they are literally plucking hydrants out of their system and capping them and calling it good just because they know that's one less opportunity for things to be stolen from. You have folks that are brazen enough to start making adjustments to valves, and the next thing you know, whether it's their SCADA or their operations team, one way or another, their system is basically being ran dry. I mean, a general internet search right now on water theft, particularly in California, is bringing some pretty extreme stories. I mean, they would probably look at us and say, well, at least they're only using your hydrants. We've got, you know, valve manipulation. We've got systems going dry. We've, you know, you name it.
Sounds like it's a good step in the right direction.
So.
I move adoption of Resolution 21-18-07 approving to adopt the water theft / unauthorized use of water services or fire hydrants policy number 112 and add to the South Feather Water Power Agency Manual of General Policies.
I'll second that.
First and second. Any questions or participation?
No comments on email as of 4:39, and no comments or questions online.
All right.
All in favor?
Yes.
Thank
you again for the last time.
This month.
All right. Public comments on closed session items.
We have director reports.
So, I felt like we talked so much that I skipped that one right out. Director's reports.
Just to state the obvious, I'm ecstatic about all the progress, the Foothill extension, all the progress we're making as an agency and as a district. These are good times. I'm proud to be a part of it. This is awesome. We just had a little more money, but other than that, it couldn't be any better. Progress.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim, do you have anything?
Yeah, I got. I'm going to be going out.
Are you going to resign as director of the board?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to do that. Because I've got things I'm doing. I'm just going to be out off the whole thing, you know.
Okay. So So can we work together to talk about what your effectivity date was? I know you were talking about maybe sometime in August, so we can work together and get you to sign a resignation letter. We'll have a fixed date on there for you. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
I'm sad to see you go.
Yes.
Well, I got a lot of things I do.
Okay. So I will get together with you. We'll work through that paperwork process.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Edwards.
No problem.
For my report, I know they started water testing in Palermo on the wells, so that's exciting. I'm anxious to see how that turns out. And, it's been a long, ongoing process. But did you have something to say about that?
We have the results. So.
Oh, yeah?
If you want to see a copy of the results, we can send them.
Love to see a copy of the results, yes.
They were all positive for nitrates.
Okay.
Some of them were real close to the MCL. So.
Okay. Do you know the number of tests that were done?
25.
25, okay.
Four were positive for coliform, total coliform, and one for E. coli.
Okay. I don't know if I should say great or...
Well, we didn't want to tell you, or do you connect to a hydrant?
What's that?
We didn't want to tell you. We thought you might connect to a
hydrant. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure. Which was one line? One, no. So. All right. That was all I have for my report. Now, any public comments for closed session?
Nothing online?
Nothing in the email as of 4:42.
All right, let's take a break for 2 minutes. We'll go into closed session. All right, going back into open session. In closed session, direction was given to legal counsel regarding real property negotiations and existing litigation.
Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned. Or is there, do I need comments on?
No final comments as of 5:38 p.m.
Okay, meeting adjourned.